जयं श्रीपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान अभिचरण अरविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जयं नतिलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की आनंदकोड़ी वैष्णव बृंद की नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकूर की प्रेम सहो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्रीअद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त बृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम गुंड राधा गुंडगिरि गोवर्धन की बृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगमाई की यमुनमाई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त बृंद की गो प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज ऑल ग्लोरीज श्री 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 गुरु एंड श्री ऑल ग्लोरीज श्री श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय भूदले श्रीमद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी भाषातिदेशधारिणे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदाम्बिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु युतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदान् सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमाहों विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणी नमाम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिसिद्धांत सरस्वती नामिनी श्रीवर्षभानुविदेवी दैताया कृपाब्धये कृष्णसंबंध विज्ञानं दायिने प्रभवे नमः माधुर्योज्ज्वल प्रेमाद्या श्रीरूपानुगभक्तिदा श्रीगौरकरुणा शक्ति विग्रहाय नमोस्तुते नमस्ते गौरवाणी श्री मूर्तये दीनधारिणे रूपानुगमिरुद्धाव सिद्धान्तद्वन्द्वहारिणे नमः गौरकिशोराय साक्षाद् वैराग्यमूर्तये विप्रलम्बरसाम्बोधे पदाम्बुजायते नमः नमो भक्तिविनोदाय सच्चिदानन्दनामिने गौरशक्तिस्वरूपाय रूपनुगवराय ते गौराविर्भवभूमिस्त्वं निर्देशासजनप्रियाः वैष्णवसार्वभौम श्रीजगन्नाथाय ते नमः वाञ्छकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो महावदान्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदाय ते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरत्विषे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशात्विजं हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगल्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कान्धा राधा कान्द नमोऽस्तु ते जयदां सुरदोपाङ्गोर्भमं मन्दमदेर्गति मत्सर्वस्य पदाम्भोजौ राधामदनमोहनौ दिव्यवृन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमाद श्रीमद्रत्नाकरसिंहासनस्थौ श्रीमद्राधा श्रीलगोविन्ददेवो प्रेष्टालिभिः सेव्यमानौ स्मरामि श्रीमन्रासरसारम्भि वंशीवटतटस्थिता कर्षान् वेणुस्वनेर्गोपेर्गोपीनाथाश्रिये स्तुना തത്ര കാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ Studying this verse in the 12th chapter. Shreyohi jnanam abhyasal jnanal dhyanam nishishyade dhyanal karma phalatyagam shyaga shanti anandaram. That is the verse we were discussing last Saturday, isn't it? In the 12th chapter, that's verse number 12, yes. Verse number 12, which we discussed on Saturday. Shreyohi jnanam abhyasal jnanal dhyanam vishishyade dhyanal karma phalatyagam tyagal shanti anandaram. That's what we have seen, isn't it? So, here, normally with the translation you will find there, literally it is translated that Jnanal dhyanam vishishyade. In other words, better than knowledge is meditation. That is how it is literally translated like that. But actually what it is that dhyanam or meditation, when it is combined with knowledge, then it is best. That is how that has to be understood. For Jnanal dhyanam vishishyade. So, a lot of people, like you can see now, many people are engaged in dhyanam, isn't it? Meditation centers all around the world. So many yoga institutes and organizations, they run meditation courses. They invite people to come and join the meditation courses, isn't it? So, and some of them propagate meditation with a goal behind it. Sometimes they say if you have a higher blood pressure, it will help if you do meditation. Or they say for cancer, meditation is very good. And also to business people, we teach them meditation, telling them that if you practice meditation, your mind will be very undisturbed and balanced. Things like that. These are all doing meditation in ignorance. That's why it is important to know that. That doing meditation in ignorance is all these kinds of things. Jnanal dhyanam vishishyade means dhyanam with the understanding of the soul, and what Krishna has spoken earlier in these chapters of Bhagavad Gita about the knowledge of the self. Knowledge of the self with the dhyanam is good. That's why it's said like that. Jnanal dhyanam vishishyade. Otherwise, it makes no sense, because dhyanam is performed by various people for various purposes. Various things happens in the dhyanam. So, if you ask them why you are performing meditation, they might say that, well, I have a very high blood pressure, or I have a very high problems with my health, and therefore they are performing meditation. And you can see advertisements very openly advertised like that. Meditation purposes. So, Shreyohi jnanam abhyasal jnanal dhyanam vishishyade. Krishna says here, so knowing by knowledge, by jnanam, knowing the goal very well,
And then engaging in meditation with that full knowledge of the truth is perfect. That is the way to understand that verse. Otherwise, so normally you will see there that this particular verse, you can see Dhyanal Karma Bhalatyagam, it says there. You see there, third line. Dhyanal Karma Bhalatyagam. So Karma Bhalatyagam has to come from Dhyanam. In other words, generally that verse is commented on the principles of Karma Yoga. You know what I'm saying? Karma Yoga principles are four, isn't it? Karmanye va adhigaraste, ma bhaleshu kadajana, ma karma balahe dubbur, ma te sangostva karmani. These four things are called Karma Sutra. It is in the second chapter, Bhagavad Gita second chapter. Four lines and four tattvam, four sutram they call it. Karma sutram they call it, chatur sutram, four sutras related to karma. So those four sutram is the one to be subjected for meditation in order to come to the platform of karma phalatyagam. Karma phalatyagam means giving up the results of one's activities. It is not meditating on a form here. This is also another important point in that verse. It is not for meditating on a form Krishna is talking about here. Normally, as soon as you say meditation, our mind goes to a form of meditation, isn't it? When you say meditation, I have to meditate on the form of Krishna, form of Vishnu, form of Narayana, like that. But in this particular instance, you can see Dhyanal Karma Bhalatyagam. From Dhyanam, Karma Bhalatyagam should come. How will Karma Bhalatyagam will come? Only if you know Karma Yogam very well. Karma Yogam should be the one you should be in meditation, which will result in Karma Bhalatyagam. That is why it is spoken like that. Without knowing this, simply thinking that, it is meditation, I have to perform meditation, then it is better than the Karma Bhalatyagam is better than. That's not how it is. Through Dhyanam, that Karma Bhalatyagam should happen. Through Jnanam, Dhyanam must happen. This is the way it is. That is the subtlety of that verse. The subtlety of that verse. Otherwise, we will, if you look at it, you will see there, because previous so many chapters, Krishna has spoken about Jnanam. Now, Krishna cannot say now that Jnanam is all useless, Dhyanam is the best. That won't make any sense, isn't it? So that is why Shayohi Jnanam Abhyasal. Abhyasam should be with Jnanam. Jnanal Dhyanam Vishishade. Dhyanam combined with Jnanam is best. Then Dhyanal, and when that Jnanam and Dhyanam is performed together, Karma Bhalatyagam must come out. And how will Karma Bhalatyagam will come out? Because Dhyanam should be subjected to the meditation of Karma Phalatyagam. Karma Phalatyagam means giving up the results of one's actions. Practically, it is Karma Yogam and Bhagavata Dharmam. Karma Yogam plus Bhakti is Bhagavata Dharmam. Karma Yogam plus Bhakti is Bhagavata Dharmam. That is what is spoken in that verse. You can see here. So, so what is the problem here? Krishna is saying here, the problem is this, that Dhyanam should be based on Karma Tattvam. What is the Karma Tattvam here? Because that is what Krishna is explaining here, that karmam we are performing in this world. Everybody is performing karmam. What for are we doing the karmam? That is the question. Because we are unable to stay without doing karmam. That's why we are doing karmam. We are under the grip of karmam, unable to free ourselves from the influence of karmam. Why do we do karmam here? Because we cannot live without engaging in karmam, some form or the other. So, then the question is, how should we perform karmam? The reality is that we cannot live in this world without engaging in karmam. Because it is like that, the next answer to that is that, how should we engage in karmam? That is where that Chatur Sutram comes, Karma Yogam Chatur Sutram comes there. Karmani Vadhigaraste, first one. Ma Bhaleshu Kadajana, second one. Ma Karma Bhalahe Durbur, third one. Ma Te Sangostva Karmani, the fourth one. So, then the question that is, karma, people engage in karma for the sake of what? To get the results, isn't it? To get the results. They will ask the question, if I'm not getting any results, what's the point in doing karma then? What is the Ma Karma Bhalahe Durbur? So there, Krishna mentions there, karmam should not be performed for the sake of results. Not for the sake of results. Then for what purpose? For only one purpose, in order to free yourself from karma. That is the purpose of doing karma. In order to free yourself from karma. So, karma is basically, to get rid of karma, you have to engage in karma. That is karma yoga, whole principle of karma yoga, isn't it? Karma actually is a disturbance inside us. It's basically a disturbance. It's an urge inside. So if that urge stops, then you are free. Then you are free. Because you can see that the nature of the karma, remember that later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, mentions about five different things, isn't it? Out of the, in which we are controlled within these five situations, like living entity, material nature, maya, karma, like that. Five things mentioned. So karma is a cause of bondage, which we all accept it, isn't it? Karma creates bondage. So that bond, that means to free ourselves from this karma, that is the principle. That is why in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna started, took karma as the first topic to talk about. Not bhakti, not jnanam. Started with karma itself. Karma has to be dealt with properly. That's why you can see the first practically six chapters simply referring to karma. Referring to karma in this world. So Krishna says that there is an urge in everyone, and once you get rid of that urge from inside, you will become free from the effect of karma. So after you have become free, then what will happen? Then anything, he just becomes a machine or a tool in Krishna's hands. He will live in this world and will be operated by Krishna. Krishna will be the operator, the body will be the machine. That situation happens to him at that stage. So, in that stage, he becomes simply a machine in Krishna's hands. Whatever has to happen, will happen. At the moment, we are not free. At the moment, we are not free. Because the vasana inside, the impressions or propensities inside, is forcing us to act one way or the other in this world. Is it not? You know that Krishna mentions that, karmajam buddhi yuktahi phalam tektva manishina. So many verses in the Karma Yoga, if you read, you will see that you have no freedom, Krishna is saying. To Arjuna also, Krishna said the same thing. You have no freedom. The vasana inside will force you to act one way or the other. So there is no freedom. And that is the first thing. That is why that urge inside, we have to come out of it. That is the purpose of this Karma Yoga. If we can't free ourselves from this bondage of karma, till we get freed from that, we won't become an instrument in Krishna's hands. In Krishna's hands. Because inside vasana, inside propensities will dictate to us to act in a particular way. So in order to, because the vasanas, that's called vasana inside. As long as the vasanas are there, we are not free. We are not free. So therefore, in Shastram, they will say that the first thing is this vasana chayam. What means, so many lifetimes, engaged in so many karma, we have accumulated so many vasana or impressions inside. We have to dry it up first, empty them first, the cylinder inside. It has to be emptied. That vasana, still the vasanas goes away, we cannot engage in spiritual activities properly. We will do according to our vasana whatever we think is right. Rather than the, so that is why Krishna is saying here, in order that vasana to go engage in karma, Krishna says, that is why that Karma Yogam chapter is important. Not for getting something. That's not the idea. That's why Krishna says, ma karma balahe durbhur, the third line. Not to get the results that you should not engage in karma. And there Krishna also made it very clear, the karma and its results has no connection between the two. Ma karma, karma bhalam, bhalam is not hetu for karma, Krishna is saying there. So after saying that, so in order to empty the karma vasana inside, the desires or the impressions inside, for that purpose, engage in karma. So suppose I don't need anything from here, from this world, then I will not be engaged in karma, isn't it? So Made Sangostu Agarmani, Krishna is saying, before you become matured in that state, pakvam, or maturity comes there, you should not say quiet, I'm not doing anything, I won't do anything. You should not do it quietly, he says, because if you stay like that, what will happen? This disturbance inside what we have, that will start causing problems. Because vasanas have not gone and you have suddenly put a stop to the karma. So what will happen? The vasanas inside will give disturbances. That is why not to give up any karma vasana. Krishna says there that analyze this very well inside, and that is that meditation Krishna is talking about. In these words, the meditation Krishna is referring to is this karma phala tyagam principle, karma yogam principle, and that should be meditated upon. Why? Only if you meditate on that, you will act in that way in this world. That's why Krishna is saying here, dhyanal karma phala tyagam. Karma phala tyagam, in order for that to happen, you have to perform the dhyanam. In order to perform the dhyanam. These four things are not four independent things. Jnanam, dhyanam, karma phala tyagam, they are all not independent. They are all connected to each other. This is that connection. This is that connection. Abhyasam first he talked about. Krishna spoke about abhyasam earlier, isn't it? Shrayohi jnanam abhyasal, Krishna says. So jnanam and abhyasam are connected together. Abhyasam should be with jnanam. Otherwise it's no use. What will you have abhyasam? What will it mean then? Like it will be like the abhyasam of the tennis players or the football players. That kind of abhyasam it will be. Abhyasam should be combined with jnanam. Similarly, jnanal dhyanam vishishyate. If you are engaged in dhyanam, that dhyanam should be combined with jnanam. And again, that dhyanam should lead to karma phalatyagam. So therefore the dhyanam is not swarupam, swarupa dhyanam. Swarupa dhyanam means Krishna's form meditation. That is not that dhyanam referring to. That dhyanam is referring to which will lead you to karma phalatyagam, giving up the results of karma, for which the dhyanam should be based on karma yoga. Do you understand that? Yeah. If you don't understand in this way, it will not give you that conviction about it. There is a flow in the bhakti yogam process. And that flow is like this, that combined with jnanam, dhyanam should be performed. Dhyanam should lead to karma phalatyagam. Karma phalatyagam, you know, giving up the results. Able to give up that selfishness from inside. To release that selfishness from inside. To become free from that bondage. The selfishness is a strong bond inside, isn't it? How do we become free from that? That for that karma phalatyagam, karma phalam has to be given up. Tyagam is required. And in order that to happen, while engaging in dhyanam, it should be centered around that karma phalatyagam, which is nothing but karma yoga. So karma yoga should be properly meditated upon, and dhyanam should be performed in that principle, and eventually karma phalatyagam must happen. If you do all that sequence properly, and Krishna is saying here, tyagal shanti anandaram. Shanti will come from that. You see? Shanti is the goal. Goal is shanti. Shanti must come, because only in shanti some realization will come. Not when you are in total rajogunam and tamogunam, no realization will come. Whatever realization comes then is also not going to stay. In order, only in shanti that realization will be proper. So that is why Krishna mentions there, Shreyohi jnanam abhyasal, jnanal dhyanam vishishyate, dhyanal karma phalatyagam, tyagam shantiranandaram. That is that flow how it Krishna has spoken here. So practically that verse is that strongly pointing out towards karma yoga, towards karma yoga. So sometimes, because this is a very misunderstood verse also in many ways, you can see here when you look at it, because karma yogam develops as bhakti. Bhakti and karma yogam is practically, there's not a lot of difference. Karma yogam has a very strong influence in the bhakti. Very strong influence in the bhakti. So, sometimes people say like this, that so many people are doing karma in this world. many people will talk about this, that we are not, we won't want to get involved in Bhagavad Gita or anything. What we want, we are actually doing karma yogam. All of us are doing karma yogam. They say like that. They say like that. Their understanding of karma yogam is work like animals in this world, and whatever results come, enjoy that very well. And then they say to everybody, we are engaged in karma yogam. This is not Krishna's karma yogam, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. And they will live like that. And they will say also, this is not the karma yogam what Bhagavad Gita has spoken. It's their own karma yogam, what they have manufactured. You see? So, so karma yogam, we have to understand the way Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. In other words, simply doing karma like jadam. Jadam means like a dead matter, like dead matter, knowing very well and engaging in karma. That is what Shreyohi Jnanam Abhyasal. How to engaging in that karma, and he has to know what does karma yogam says, and also he has to know very well that this body itself has come to this world to engage in karma. Otherwise, we wouldn't have got a material body if we had no karma to burn up. In order to burn the karma, we have come here with this gross material body. So, in the most difficult thing here is to find out what is one's karma. That is the most difficult thing. To find out what is one's own karma according to the vasana inside. And in order to do that karma in a particular way, and without any attachment, able to engage in that karma, and doing like that is a great art. Krishna says that. Yogam karmasu kaushalam. That is that word referring to earlier in the Karma Yogam chapter. Krishna will say this. Yogam karmasu kaushalam. Engaging in that, finding out what is that karma I have to do so that the vasana in me will go away. This is the secret of Karma Yoga. The purpose of Karma Yoga is not to become a big person in this world, prime minister or president or a businessman or a rich man. No, that is not the goal. The goal of Karma Yoga is to how to remove all the vasanas from inside using this karma, what the body has to do, and in that way able to free oneself from the bondage of karma. That is Karma Yoga. So there is, first thing is finding out what is one's proper karma, what will help him. And secondly, how to do it in the most expert way, expertise for that. So you remember we mentioned this before also, yogakarmasu kaushalam. That word kaushalam has come from brahmacharis going to the forest to cut the grass, darbha grass, or they also call it as kusha grass. So while cutting the kusha grass, they will easily get hurt because they are so sharp, this grass. So there is a special way of cutting them out. And once you become expert in that, then you can cut as much grass as you want, because the brahmacharis need darbha grass for their sacrifices, and sannyasis also need that for sacrifices. So darbha is required, kusha grass is required. So they require a lot of kusha grass and they have to go to forest to collect it. So while cutting the grass, they can get hurt and bleed the hand. But once they become experts, they will know how to do it. And that expertise is called kaushalam. That's where from kushagrass word came kaushalam. Kushagrass word came kaushalam. Like that. So here, and similarly, once you become expert, and in that way you have to do the karma. In other words, karma should not create any impact inside. That is the most important principle. We have so many times we engage in karma, but karma is not complete till we come out of it. We say one particular karma is complete when the job is completed. No, it's not. That's not when karma is completed. When we have engaged in a karma, the vasana that it has created inside, if it is not created any vasana inside, then that karma is complete. If it has created any vasana inside, then the karma is not complete. That is what Krishna is saying here. So if we have learned how to do karma in that way, that is what one has to learn in during dhyanam. That dhyanam, dhyanal karma phalatyagam, Krishna mentions there, isn't it? That dhyanam is for this, how to engage in karma without creating a bhalam results desire inside. Yeah, dhyanal karma phalatyagam. Karma bhalam, one able to perform, able to sacrifice the results of the karma without any attachment to it, without any desire for that. If one is able to free oneself from the karma vasana inside, that is what is to be meditated upon during that verse what Krishna is saying. Not Swarupa Dhyanam, not the form of Krishna meditation. That's not what it is spoken there. Then the next step is, after that dhyanam meditation, the next thing is execution. So naturally, once you have got that, how to engage in karma in that, then how to execute that karma in this world, that is the next step. How to engage the next step. So such a person, when he is engaged in the world, he will continue to engage in activity, but he will have no plans to enjoy the results. But that has to happen with proper understanding. Not that one do work in this world saying that, oh, I'm giving up all the results. But if attachment has not gone away from inside, that's not giving up. It's a very subtle thing that happens inside. A story is spoken in this connection. A great personality, a Mahatma, he was a sannyasi, very learned, very realized also, knew what the goal his life was, and he lived in a place, old person, wasn't interested in very much in traveling a lot, wanted to live in one place. So he thought about that, and he realized that perhaps something to do. He felt the need to do something. So he had a small piece of land, not a large piece, a small piece of land. And land was available with plenty of water. Plenty of water was available. So he decided that I'll plant this banana trees there, a lot of banana trees. Banana requires a lot of sunshine, a lot of water, and a lot of care also. Continuously, if you go and see banana plantation, you will see there that they require a lot of water, a lot of sunshine, a lot of care. If you do that, all of them, then you will get, after 12 months, you will have a good growth of bananas. So he was engaged in that. He grew a lot of banana plants. And it normally takes about 10-12 months for them to come out with the fruits. So he was growing that. So when he has grown, he didn't put any fence around his plantation. He stayed next to that, so he never felt any need for making any fence around. He grew the bananas. And when the bananas have become all ripe and they're ready for cutting, for use, he will cut all the banana bunches, huge bunches from each plant, and then he will take it and distribute it to all the people in the village where he lived. He used to distribute all that. And people will take it because he is giving it like that with a good heart, so they will naturally take it. That's why it was. This happened once, 2 years like that, but he did that every year without asking for any money from anyone. He just thought, I have time to do it. And plenty of water available, land is there. So he used his physical capacity to grow these bananas. And from 1 year, he will keep the smaller ones for the next year, like that, you know, how they grow bananas. So So second or third year, when you grow bananas like this, somebody noticed that he was giving it free to everybody. So when the bananas were ready in the night, they came, cut all the bananas and took it and went away. One morning when he woke up and looked at the banana trees, everything was gone. All the bananas were gone from the tree. It's all emptied. So some people came and asked him, then why you grow these bananas like this? Everybody has stolen, something has been stolen now. He says, that doesn't matter, that they must be needing it. That's why they have taken it, isn't it? He said. Again, he grew bananas. Again, the same thing happened for a couple of years. Bananas were getting stolen. There was nothing there in the garden. When, he will grow everything and it will be stolen by somebody like that. So finally, he said, somebody asked him, he said, I was growing the bananas, and I was not expecting anything from that. I just felt the happiness in doing that. And now I'm happy that somebody who wants it has come and taken it. Earlier I had to go and give it to people. Please take it, please take it. I had to say this to them. Now that problem is gone, he said. Somebody really who needs it is coming. This is how he saw that. What does that indicate? Indicate means that he's able to do that karma without any connection with the results. Results did not bother him at all. That is why Krishna is saying this, that dhyanal karma bhalatyagam is not a simple thing. Karma bhalatyagam, to give up the results of our activities, is a very difficult thing, properly to release it. Because from karma bhalam, when we give it away, there is always a certain element of connection with it. It does not go away from the mind. Suppose karma, bhalam, results offered to Krishna, if it is not properly utilized, you feel bad about it, isn't it? So that means, although you have given the result, it has not gone away from inside completely. It's a catch there. There is a catch in the karma bhalatyagam. And that is very difficult to overcome. So that will only happen when in a natural way, selflessly, it is done for a longer period of time with proper understanding. That means every time, whenever karma bhalatyagam has to happen, prior to that, dhyanam is necessary. Proper dhyanam will give us a proper understanding of doing the karma bhalatyagam. Otherwise, you won't know how to do the karma bhalatyagam. Sometimes you can get cheated also in this world, because vyavaharam is all cheating, isn't it? Vyavaharam is all cheating in this world. You can't tell any truth in this world. Vyavahara means lie, cheating. That always goes on in this world. So that you can see. For example, if you go into the government office and you want to apply for a passport, you mention your name there. You can't put your name that I am spirit soul, Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. That's my name, if you ask. My actual name is like that, isn't it? All of us have got the same name. We all have the same name, actually. What we have got is different bodies. Otherwise, but what do we actually do? It's a lie we are telling them. I have to tell them this lie. I am so and so. In my name, I have to say what has been given. That's not my name, actually. My name is real name. Is Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. I am eternally liberated. I am pure. And I am fully conscious. And I'm Nitya Buddha Shuddha Mukta Swarupam. And I'm fully conscious, I'm fully liberated and fully pure. That's my real name. And that's everybody's name also, it's the same thing. But when you say that in the passport form, they will put you, lock you up in the some so lock you up in a madhouse, saying that man has gone mad. And if then you have to fill them date of birth. There you say, I never born. According to Bhagavad Gita, that is the truth. I was never born. Na jayate, Krishna is saying. So in Vyavaharam, you have to tell lie only. If this Vyavaharam world is full of lies, nothing but lie. There is no truth in the Vyavaharam. Whatever society has created, it's all lies. We have to live with that, that's all, to manage here. But it is not the truth. Truth, you can't accept that. So that's why Krishna is saying, na jayate, but I have to put my date of birth there. Isn't it? So everything you fill up the form, filling and all these things, we take it for granted. Oh, it's okay. Because to get the passport, you have to do that. So that is how it is. So what the point is here that the that so karma phalam, while giving up, it is a big difficult thing, in the sense that only a person who know the secret of karma can do it properly. Otherwise, what will happen? People will say that, oh, I've done this, I've done that, and there will be a lot of lamentation about it. And otherwise, some people will do it in a different way. They will say like this, that when they give something for Krishna, they feel immensely happy inside. And not only that, they want the whole world should know that they have done this. There should be a photograph taken, it should be put in the newspaper, in the television, everything. We have to tell the whole world what we are doing in our spiritual life. If you don't do it, they don't get sleep at night. What can you do? So that is how some people are. So that means that shows their understanding of karma, karma phala tyagam. No properly understood things. That's why it's coming from. Every little thing what they do, it should be in all the websites all over the world. In all the newspapers, televisions, everywhere it should be published. We have done this. So this is coming from that. Why? Karma phalatyagam, there was no dhyanam about it. That is what Krishna is saying here, that it is not for the sake of ego, or ego has a pleasure seeking center inside. Everybody has that pleasure seeking center. So it needs something, that pleasure seeking center inside. Either it wants money, or another few people should come to know that what we have done, and others should talk about it. This is all the pleasures that it's looking for. If he doesn't get anything, then he won't do anything. If he doesn't get a lot of followers to glorify him, or if he doesn't get a lot of money and recognition from the world, he won't do anything. That's the very nature of that. So Krishna is saying here, it is not for this purpose that you should do karma. You should not engage in karma. What is the purpose then? Krishna says here, you should continue doing that. Karma neva adhikaraste. That verse, Chatur Sutram. Ma bhaleshu kadachana. Ma karma balahe durbur. Ma de sangosto karmani. This Chatur Sutram of Karma Yoga is the subject for meditation before karma bhalatyagam. That is the principle. Yeah? So that's the principle. That is what that verse is referring to. So, once you have performed contemplation of that verse properly, then karma bhalatyagam will happen properly. Because Krishna says here that the perfection of karma is sakrit karma. Krishna calls it a Krishna karma. You must have heard about that word. Krishna karma. You know that word, don't you? Krishna karma krit, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. In Karma Yoga chapter, Krishna karma krit. In other words, Krishna karma means there the karma has become complete. In other words, karma has become complete. And not in the result it is complete. What has happened is that you don't need that result because the vasana has gone away from inside. So, while engaging in karma, karma becomes complete. You know, when we engage in any karma in this world, its completion is not based on the result. Normally, that's how we think karma is complete, isn't it? If the result has come out properly according to our desire or thought, we consider that the karma is complete. That's how normally we do in this world. Krishna is saying it is not like that. While engaging in karma, if the karma vasana has gone away from inside, then your karma is complete. Don't worry about the results, Krishna is saying. Because that is the principle of karma yoga. It is not based on the laws of the material world. In material world, the law is like this. Oh, you've done a good job, they say to you. Is it not? Then you do something well, people tell you you've done a good job. What has happened then? You feel your ego gets a little bit hyped. By then, that is not karma yoga. That is not karma yoga. That's what Krishna is saying here, that karmajam buddhiyuktahi bhalam tektwa manishana. So many times Krishna repeats this in the Bhagavad Gita. That karmajam buddhiyuktahi, that karma yogam itself is a very big art. Very big art. So, and in Bhagavad Gita, who is the specialist? Krishna says, one who knows Krishna karmam. One who knows the Krishna karmam. Where to finish the karmam he should know. When the vasanas have gone away from inside. It's a very subtle thing and at the same time very scientific also. Inside what is happening. And Krishna says here that Krishna karmam. That is like karmam is complete when it is Krishna karmam. When Krishna says like that. So how is that possible? Krishna says, jnanal dhyanam vishishyate. When dhyanam is performed. So you can see the influence of jnanam in everything. The influence of jnanam in dhyanam. Influence of jnanam in abhyasam. Influence of jnanam in karmaphalatyagam. Everywhere the influence of jnanam is there. You can't take it away from there. Unless it is executed in that way, the results will not, the spiritual result will not be perfect. Materially everything may come out okay. The results may come out okay. But spiritually you have not freed yourself from the karma. That is the problem. That is the problem. So, if all this happens, what Krishna says here is that because it has been executed properly in that way, that all the results ultimately what will lead into? Inside Shanti will come. Inside Shanti will come. Sometimes you can see this also. Karmam that is performed with a lot of desire of results, it will not give you Shanti inside. When does Shanti come? Shanti comes when karmam is executed and that you are able to completely leave that karmam from inside. Karma vasana gone away from inside. Then Krishna is saying Shanti will naturally come to a person. Shanti will naturally come to. So otherwise, if it is linked to the result, that everything, how much do I get from this? What do I get from doing this? And he will keep on looking at the result all the time. And even if you get it, the happiness will last for some time. The happiness will last for some time. So, just like if you have grown banana and you start eating banana, only till it reaches here you will feel something. Once it's gone after that, there's nothing to feel. It is gone, isn't it? So, similarly, result is the same whether you have eaten or not. So that is what Krishna is saying here. That secret of the karma yogam should be understood. Therefore, in order to perform this dhyanam, you have to study that third chapter very well. Karma Yogam chapter. It is such an important chapter in the Bhagavad Gita that the secret of karmam is what is discussed in that. That's why it's called Karma Yogam, isn't it? So once you have known that secret of Karma Yogam well, then Krishna is saying, keep that as the object of meditation and combined with that knowledge of the Karma Yogam, Karma Bhalatyagam must happen. And if Karma Bhalatyagam happens, giving up the results of karmam in that way, then Krishna says Shanti will come for that person. This is the idea behind it. This is the idea behind it. Now, something important. Up to this point in the 12th chapter, we discussed bhakti. Isn't it? You have seen how bhakti Krishna has handled it. So different than the way we have often understood that. Why? Why is it like that? Because we are not taking that way Krishna has spoken about Bhakti Yogam chapter. The way Krishna presented Bhakti, so many from end of the 11th chapter, where Mal Karma Krita Mal Paramo Mal Bhakta Sangha Varjita Nurvaira Sarvabhudeshu Yasamamedi Pandava. From then, Arjuna asked the question, Evam Sadadayutai Bhaktastvam Varivasade Ejabi Aksharam Abhyaktam Teshamge Yogavitama. That was the first verse, the question, isn't it, from Arjuna. In answer to that, Krishna very systematically put to Arjuna, beginning with Aksharam, that Svabhavam, and Mayavesha Manoyemam Nityayukta Upasade Shraddhaya Parayo Vedasteme Yuktatamamada. We have seen that many times. First Krishna spoke about that, then Arjuna asked the question, whether Bhagavata Dharmam is good or the Jnanamargam is good, which is better? Arjuna asked the question. Krishna didn't answer that question directly. Did you see there? He didn't answer that directly. He said, Arjuna, it is like this. Shraddhaya Varayobedasyame Yukta Tamamada. If the Shraddha is there, then any process is good. So first, and then he said that the problem with Yanamargam is those who are in the bodily concept of life and those who are absorbed in the world, for them it is difficult. Saying that, he left it like that there. And then he also mentioned Aksharam, Anirdeshyam, Sarvatragam, Achindyam, Kutastam, Achalam, all kinds of things Krishna spoke there about the impersonal realization there. To explain that it is not a simple process for everybody. Telling us that the difficulty of that process, unless that Prajna Shuddhi has happened inside, we will not get the message right. Will not get the message right. For example, Shravanam happens in three different modes. Somebody hears in mode of passion, somebody hears in the mode of ignorance, somebody hears in the mode of goodness. The one in the mode of goodness will get practically the message in a proper way. The one in the mode of passion will understand and confuse, and questions and everything will come. There is no question of having any questions. There is no need for that. The message is pretty straightforward. But if in Rajogunam, if you have heard the message, a lot of doubts and questions will come. And if in Tamogunam, if you have heard the message, there will be no questions. In another way, there will be no questions at all, because nothing has gone in, so there is no questions either. So this is how it is. I mean, the message is concerned, it is pure and it is very straightforward. Krishna's message in the Bhagavad Gita. But to get that message properly inside, modes of nature is important. You know that in the Bhagavatam you will sometimes be shocked. Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, Vritrasura, they all speak transcendental knowledge. Have they not? You can see there. They all talk about transcendental knowledge. They all know everything. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, they also know very well. But why is that? It's not having any effect on them. You look at it in the Bhagavad Gita, you will see. In the Bhagavatam, when Hiranyaksha died, isn't it? That time Hiranyakashipu goes to his mother, and Hiranyakashipu talks to their mother is Didi Devi. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, their mother is Didi Devi. So he says to Didi Devi, says to him, anyone who has born has to die. Hiranyakashipu is saying this. One who was born has to die. Soul transmigrates from one body to another. Hiranyakashipu's knowledge. He's saying all these things. Then he says, ultimately everything is under control of time. What more do you want? Obviously he has understood Bhagavad Gita very well. It seems like that, isn't it? So he has spoken everything there. But then the question will come, why is Hiranyakashipu acting like this if he knows all these things? That is the difference. Difference is this, that Hiranyakashipu, same thing with Kamsa also. Have you noticed with Kamsa speaking? Kamsa says the same thing. That when Vasudeva was talking to him, and Kamsa afterwards, when they were all the children were killed, Krishna's six brothers, elder brothers, they were all killed by Kamsa. After they were killed, later on, Kamsa realized that he has done the wrong thing. So he says to Devaki, you should read the verses there in the Bhagavad. What Kamsa has to say. Kamsa is saying to Devaki, are we not all under the control of that Supreme? He's saying like that, after killing all these children. So there you will notice that what has gone wrong with this person? He has done such a nonsense all before, and then he says like this. So there must be some problem there, isn't it? The problem is this, that knowledge is there in everyone. But if you are in the mode of passion, that knowledge will have no impact on you. It won't have any effect on you. So that is the difficulty. Hiranyakashipu's problem is also the same. Hiranyakashipu goes to forest and performs such meditation, such tapasya he performs there. Brahma comes, and what is he asking him? Hiranyakashipu is asking from Brahma, I want all these conditions. Nobody should be able to kill me, neither in the day, nor in the night, nor in the outside, nor inside, nor by man, nor by animal. Like this, you can see there how their mind is working. That Rajogunam inside is working. Because there is no trace of Sattagunam inside, all that knowledge what he has is of no use to him. This is the importance of the Sattagunam. That is why Krishna is saying there, Sattval Sanjayade Jnanam. Jnanam will only have its effect if it comes in Sattagunam. So, Sattvam, Rajas, Tamas, three modes of nature. And in Sattagunam, it will develop and it will enlighten people. In Sattagunam. Rajogunam will disturb him. Rajogunam will create disturbance, engage in karma. Tamogunam will make him sleepy and he will fall to sleep. He'll go sleepy. So that is the problems there. So that's what Krishna is talking about here. That, so you can see that there are many examples about that. So those who have known this, Krishna says there, Tyagal Shanti Anandaram. Shanti will be the results. So once it so happened that a person who was reading Ramayanam very well, famous Ramayanam speaker he was. He used to read Ramayanam a lot. He went to a sannyasi in Hrishikesh, Shivananda Saraswati. He went up to him and he says to him that I have been reading Ramayanam for so many years. It was the same time when Tyagaraja was leaving. And Tyagaraja was not traveling or anything. He lived at home and engaged in his bhajana at home, singing about Ramachandra, and that's how he lived his life. This person, he used to wander around and propagate Ramayanam a lot, served a lot like that. And he came to know that Ramachandra has appeared many times to Tyagaraj, and Tyagaraj and Ramachandra's conversation became very famous later on. So he asked Shivananda Saraswati this question, that how is that I have been reading Ramayanam for so many years. He is also an old person. So many years I have been reading Ramayanam regularly. And I also heard that Tyagaraj used to is worshipping Ramachandra. 960 million times he has chanted Ramachandra's name. 960 million times. 96 crores they say. 960 million times. Rama, the name he has chanted. So Shivananda Saraswati, but for Tyagaraja writes a lot about Ramachandra in his dreams, in his vacant state, everything he is dreaming about Ramachandra and is writing. This person is telling to Shivananda Saraswati, for me, he says, when I go to sleep, I am dreaming about Shorpanakha, I am getting the dreams of Tataka, Kumbhakarna and people like that. I never get Ramachandra or Lakshmana or Sitadevi in my dreams. All I am getting is all the demons who are in the Ramayana. Why is it like this? At least once cannot Ramachandra can come in my dream, he said. That's what his question was. Why is it like that? That I am also spent 50-60 years propagating Ramayanam. Now I have been reading Ramayanam so many times. And lot of people heard Ramayanam. And the result is this, he said, that I never get any realization about Ramachandra. Ramachandra never spoke to me. Not once he appeared in my dream. Instead, I get the dream of Kumbhakarna, Tataka, and Shurpanaga, and characters whom you don't want to know about. They are all appearing in my dreams, he said to him. So, so that is what this verse is saying. Shreyohi jnanam abhyasal jnanal dhyanam vishishyade. That verse is a very subtle verse. If you think about this, anandaram vina shandihi, he says there, isn't it? So, karma bhalatyagam, after performing, you look at the word, tyagal shandi anandaram, he says. Anandaram. So, here, karma bhalatyagam, if you perform that, then perform, and then shandi comes, not like that. That as soon as you perform that tyagam, of karma phalam, shanti immediately comes, isn't it? Now the question is, what is shanti? What is shanti? It's a question, big question, isn't it? You know, people, these words in the shastram, they have to be clearly understood what exactly it means. For us, Shanti, Anandam, Sukham, it's all one. When I'm happy, I say, oh, I'm very happy now. I had a nice feast. I chanted, I danced well, and I enjoyed everything. So I had great happiness. Shanti, I'm happy. Shanti, Sukham. No, there's a big difference between all these words. Sukham, Shanti, Anandam, all that kind. There's a specific spiritual difference between these terminologies. So if you look there, you will see that when sannyasis take sannyasam, they learn from Kaivalya Upanishad. There is a Kaivalya Upanishad, famous Kaivalya Upanishad is main mantra from Kaivalya Upanishad is used in the sannyasa mantra. It's used as a sannyasa mantra. One of those mantras there, it says, Om na karmana na prajaya dhanena tyagenega amrutatvamanashu parena nagam nikhidam guhayam vibrajadeyad yadayo vishandi vedanta vijnana sunischitartham sannyasa yogat yadaya shuddha sattvaha te brahmaloke du parandakale പരാമൃതാത് പരിമുച്ഛന്തി സർവേ ധരം വിപരം പരമേശ്മ ഭൂതം യത് പുണ്ഡരീകം പുരമധ്യ സഗ്മസ്തം തത്രാഭിധരം ഗഗനം വിശോകതസ്മിൻ യത് അന്തസ്ഥ ഉപാസിതവ്യം യോ വേദദൗ സ്വരപ്രോക്തോ വേദാന്തേ ച പരിഷ്ഠത തസ്യ പ്രകൃതി ലീനസ്യ യ പരാസ മഹേശ്വര. This is from the Kaivalya Upanishad, a mantra that is used in the sannyasa ashram. When they were giving, a lot of mantras are given to the sannyasis at that time. So, there, the mantra is spoken like that. In the traditional way when sannyasam is given. So, who is a sannyasi? Krishna will mention that later in the Bhagavad Gita. Sannyasam tyagam uchyate. Tyagam is the force behind sannyasam. Force behind sannyasam is tyagam. Tyagam means to give up everything. To give away everything. No more for oneself living in this world. All for others. All for others. In other words, one who has given up the results of his karma for others. That is the opinion in the Bhagavad Gita also. So, one who does not desire any results from karma, he is a sannyasi. One who does not desire any results from karma. And that freedom from desire, freedom from karma has to happen inside. Not that suppose if I don't take results from an action, that's not sannyasam. When does it become sannyasam? Not only that you don't take the results from that, but you don't even desire that. That stage has to come inside. Then it's a karma sannyasam or karma yogam. Being like that, chitta shuddhi happens. That is the result of that. And continuously when one does that, inside there will be what is known as the he reaches that state of realization inside, in his own heart, comes to that. So, Hridaya Kuhara Madhya. Hridaya Kuhara means that space inside, Hridaya Kuhara. That there and that one becomes that freedom from that attachment, goes away from inside. So, here, that this Upanishad mantra is saying, in the beginning of the Vedam, what is Pratishtidam? Pratishtidam means what is established inside, Krishna's presence inside, in other words, he will have a little realization there. When one results are given away from this world, not taking anything from here, everything is given away all the time. So, sattvam, rajasa, tamasa, these three things are there inside, isn't it, in our mind. So, here, as a witness to all our activities, Krishna is present within our heart. Within our heart, he is present there. So, and this Upanishad verse is saying that when we hear this mantra is dedicated to the sannyasis, to giving them this understanding that not to take anything from this world, rather all the karma that they do in this world is simply an offering to Krishna as a tyagam, sacrifice from inside. So tyagam means not simply giving up, but without expecting anything from that. That is the most difficult thing, isn't it? So, After saying all these things, Karma Bhalatyagam Krishna has spoken there. It is in this Kaivalya Upanishad Mantram also. After saying all that, Krishna closes this chapter here. He closes that chapter and concludes something there. And that conclusion, what is that? His conclusion is like that. If you have come through these 11, 12 verses, what we have looked at so far, what will happen to a person who has followed these 12 verses in his life? How will he be? And that is the remaining 8 verses. And that ends the chapter. Yeah. So the first 12 verses up to this 12th verse, there's only totally 20 verses in that. So these 12 verses Krishna has spoken, if you have properly studied them, thought about it and taken it on board in life, that will change our life, isn't it? It will make us to act in a particular way. That is bhakti. Krishna calls it as bhakti. And such a devotee who has taken all these 12 verses on board and is living a life like that, with that understanding, what will be his nature? That is the remaining 8 verses from now. All the 8 verses. So, when you say that what is devotee, the answer is this 8 verses. He is a devotee. There is no other way you can explain. That is Krishna's definition of a devotee. And you will also notice another thing, that in none of these verses, nothing is mentioned about your external side. It's all internal. All of them. Internally, whether you are a devotee or not. That's the question as far as Krishna is concerned. Krishna is not bothered whether you have a kantimala, whether you have a shikha, whether you are a dhoti, whether you have this or that. That's another thing that you may do or may not do. That is not the important side. This is the inside, is that's the most matters, what matters. That is why the remaining 8 verses, you don't see any reference to anything in relationship with other things in this world. Normally, we will refer to someone who has got he's a devotee. As soon as you see him in the street, you will say he's a devotee. And somebody else who is wearing something else, he's not a devotee, you will say like that. He's a karmi. But that is no, it doesn't go in the Bhagavad Gita like that. Krishna's all verses, if you start looking from here, symptoms of a devotee, Krishna calls that here. Symptoms of a devotee. Why? Bhavagrahi Janardana. Krishna is bhavam, is matters to Krishna. So, one who is a devotee or not, only person who can decide that is Krishna. Nobody else can decide whether you are a devotee or not. The devotee is to be decided by Krishna himself and nobody else. So, therefore, all the internal symptoms, all the internal symptoms, that is what Krishna talks about. External symptoms, anybody can imitate. It's not very difficult, isn't it? It's not very difficult externally to make yourself a devotee. It's not very difficult at all. You get nice couple of nice dhotis from South Hall and shave your head nicely and keep a first class shikha and a tilak and a kantimala, then you are a devotee. So external symptoms doesn't matter. But internal symptoms matters a lot. That's why Krishna is saying now, from now on. For example, if you are a Vaishnava devotee, he will have a tulsi beads and a tilak and all. If he is a Shiva devotee, he will have a rudraksham and he will have a vibhuti on the. So there will be so many people like that in this world. But that's not what Krishna is saying here. So like that, you can see what happens in the in Indian movies, not here, in Indian movies sometimes, some film actors, they'll have to act the role of devotees. Sometimes there was one person, he was acting always Ramchandra or Vishnu or Krishna. Some film role he has always like that. So what they do, you can see the problem, what they create. His name was Ramarao, that was his name. And he always used to act in all kinds of movies. And mostly it will be Puranic stories. Either he will become as Ramchandra or Krishna or Vishnu or something. Some role he will play. Years and years he was doing that. And then after that, He entered into politics after leaving his film career. He moved into politics. And there also he was dressing up like that, because that's how people know him, in that dress. In sentimentalism, I'm saying, that he knows that by dressing up like that, he will get the votes from the public. So he was using that all the time. Even when he was making his election propaganda, he was dressed up like Ramchandra. Sometimes it was like Krishna sometimes. Sometimes like Vishnu with four hands, he was wandering around. So all sorts of things happen in this world in the name of spiritual life. So Krishna knows this very well. That's why he didn't talk about the external things, anything, not a word. All he talks about is the inside of that person. It does not matter that there can be devotees like that also, but it's not that. But what Krishna is saying here, that there could be possibility of imitation in that. Imitation will happen. That's why internal symptoms are very important. Internal symptoms are very important. So, because when it comes to internal qualities, those qualities, if you look carefully, they are the same for a karma yogi, for a bhakta, for a jnani, for a yogi, for a liberated person, and anyone you will look, the qualities are the same for everybody. It's one and the same. If you look into the qualities, you will see. We'll go through the qualities one by one. And you will notice there, only if it is internal thing, whereas if you look into a jnani yogi, karma yogi, bhakta, all externally, they'll all be different, isn't it? But Krishna's point is, only you look into the internal side, and internally, if he has all these qualities, he is a devotee, he's a jnani, he's a yogi, he is a bhakta, whatever that is, it'll be the same. Because there, once you get to that stage, everything becomes one. It's not different. When you look from inside, they're all the same. They're all the same. Because by then, false ego is gone away, left them. False ego has completely left them. And it's a pure devotee then, or a great jnani then, or a great yogi then, all that stage. So, therefore, inside is the same, outside is the only difference. Externally there is difference, but internally it's the same quality in every one of them. That is why in the next two verses, if you look, you will see how Krishna begins with those qualities. Verse 13 and 14. Advaishta sarva bhutanam maitra karuna mevacha Nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sukhakshami sandushta sadadam yogi yatalpa drida nishchaya mayarpidamano buddhe yomal bhakta same priyaha advaishta sarva bhudanam Maitra karuna mevacha Nirmamo nirahankara Samadukha sukhakshami Sandushta sadadam yogi Yatalpa drida nischaya Mayarpitamano buddhir Yomad bhakta same priyaha Advaishta sarva bhudanam maitra karuna evachaha nirmamo nirahankaraha sama dukha sukha kshami sandushtaha satatam yogi yata alma drida nischayaha mai arpida mano buddhi yomad bhakta same priyaha. That is the translation. One who is not envious, but who is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, who is free from false ego, and equal both in happiness and distress, who is always satisfied and engaged in devotional service, with a determination, has whose mind and intelligence are in agreement with me, he is very dear to me. That is what Krishna is saying there. So, after these 12 verses, as I said, Krishna talks about this. Adveshta sarvabhudanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahangara samadukha sugakshami sandushta sadadam yogi yad atma drada nischayaha may arpita manobuddhir yomad bhakta samay priyaha. So, Krishna says like that. So, here, we say, I like Krishna. We all say, I like Krishna. But in these verses, Krishna is telling us whom he likes. We all say, all devotees say, I like Krishna, isn't it? But it's a little difference here. Here, Krishna is saying whom he likes. That is the difference. We may like him, but whether he likes us or not, we don't know, do we? That only Krishna knows. But Krishna is saying, these remaining 8 verses now is those people whom Krishna likes. Whom Krishna likes. That's what it is. So, type of people whom Krishna likes. Therefore, because Krishna mentions this later on, in the Bhagavatam you will see, nirapeksha munim shandam nirvairam samadarshinam anuvrajamyaham nityam uyeye tangrirenubhi. There is a verse in the Ekadasha Skandam. Krishna says, I follow them, those devotees who have no desires, isn't it? Who don't ask for anything. Nirabeksham. Muni, shandam, always in shandi. Nurvairam, no enmity towards anybody. Samadarshinam, seeing everything equally in this world. Anuvrajami, I follow them, aham nityam, every day. Puyayeti angri renubhi. I take the dust from their feet to purify myself and put it on my head. Krishna is saying like this about a devotee, isn't it? So there you can see that such a devotee who walks around like that, his nature is that he has no desires, first thing. And he is a muni, thoughtful person. Thoughtful person means always absorbed in the soul, spiritual life, in other words. For him, that's the only important thing in this world, spiritual realization. Shandi, always in peaceful state. No hate. Unim nirvairam, no hate towards anyone. And samadarshinam, always equally situated, samadarshinam. So, Krishna says like that, I take the puyayet angri renubi, I take the dust from their feet and purify myself. Krishna says this to Uddhava in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? So, Kabir also says about the same thing. Kabir says like this, I have been chanting the name of Ramachandra, Rama, Rama, Rama. And now I have stopped chanting, but he hasn't stopped, says. Ramachandra has not stopped chanting, he says. Because Kabir says, Ramachandra is running around now, everybody, Kabir, 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 he is chanting now. Ramachandra, because that is that relationship between Ramachandra and Kabir. So that is why here, whom Krishna likes, that's what it is more important. Here you have to look at the great devotee's relationship with Krishna, how that relationship was. When Sudama came to see Krishna, Krishna came and embraced him, isn't it? Krishna came and embraced him. When he embraced Sudama did not feel any emotions. On the other hand, Krishna felt all the emotions. If you read Bhagavatam, you will see. Krishna was experiencing all the excitement. Tears started coming from Krishna's eyes. Krishna was so excited about it after seeing Sudama. And that experience of Krishna is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If you look into the 10th canto, you will see. I'll read out couple of verses from there, just to make that important understanding that why is it like that? We have to ask that question. Normally, devotee sees Krishna and he feels the excitement, isn't it? It's the 80th chapter in the 10th canto. Chapter 80. Look at that verse, he says, 19 verse. Sakyuhu priyasya viprasher angasangadinarvrudaha prido vimunjala bindun netrabhyam pushkarechana. Sugar Brahma Rishi says this in the Bhagavadam. In the Bhagavadam, Sukadeva Goswami is talking about Krishna at that time. What happened to him? That sakyu priyasya viprashe angasangadi nirubhradaha. That when Krishna Sudama came and Krishna embraced Sudama, what happened to him? Angasangadi nirubhradaha. All parts of Krishna's body became very, ecstatic experience in Krishna's body. Krishna was experiencing ecstasy within himself. And prido vimunjada bindun netrabhyam pushkarechanaham. Prido vimunjada bindun. From Krishna's eyes, tears started coming after embracing Sudama. And Sudama was standing there unaffected by anything. What do you think? Here, Sudama has come to see Krishna, and Krishna goes down from the palace, from upstairs, he saw Sudama coming, so he ran all the way down to receive Sudama. And seeing that happiness, Krishna embraced him. After embracing Sudama, normally it should have been the other way, isn't it? Suppose Krishna gives you a hug, the devotee should feel happy. Krishna has given me a hug. But here, devotee is standing there unaffected by anything. Krishna is affected by that. And tears were coming from Krishna's eyes. Krishna's body was in ecstasy, ecstatic experiences. That's why it says here, Sakya priyasya viprasher anga sangadi nirubhradaha prido vimujjada bindun netrabhyam pushkarekshanaha. Then from there, he takes him to upstairs to the palace and then looks after her. That's all in the Bhagavadam, you can see that later. So here, the important thing, that when that happened there, it says there that that Krishna felt the happiness more than the devotee. Krishna felt the happiness. So that means there was something in Sudama which Krishna wanted, made him feel that. So there's something in Sudama which gave him that happiness. So generally, Krishna feels happiness when a devotee comes, and especially a devotee of that stages, like Sudama, who is completely surrendered. That is the greatness. No false ego inside, isn't it? No false ego inside. So normally in Bhagavadam, when it is spoken in a little different way. What does Krishna likes most? Everybody says Krishna likes the butter, isn't it? Butter is what Krishna likes. We say like that. So this butter is not the butter what we are talking about from getting from the cows. So in the while talking about gopis, it mentions hridayam abhimushitva harshasindhau nyathastvam. Hridayam abhimushitva harshasindhau nyathastvam. That gopis, that Krishna has stolen the butter. What is that butter Krishna has stolen? Krishna has stolen their heart. It's a heart that what Krishna wants from the devotee. That's what, that is that butter we are talking about. Sukhadeva vimushitva harsha sindhau nyathastvam. So stealing the butter is another way, is a way to get the heart, stealing the gopi's heart. That stealing butter is spoken in the Bhagavadam like that. Through that stealing butter, Krishna wanted to steal the heart of the gopis. That's what has happened. So, because what is the most important thing what Krishna wants? Krishna wants, always likes to have the nice prasadam also. But the prasadam what Krishna is looking for is bhakti. Bhakti, isn't it? So, another word for Krishna is prema bhuk. In the thousand names you will see this word, prema bhuk, the love from the devotee. So, that wherever there is love, that's what Krishna eats. That's what Krishna is. In other words, bhakti. Prema means nothing but bhakti. So, you can see here that stealing one's heart actually means that Krishna enjoys that. That takes away that bhakti inside. He takes it, enjoys that. That is the butter what Krishna is looking from a devotee. That is the bhakti. In the case of, in the case of Jnana Sambandhar, we talked about this before. That when he was a 3-year-old boy, He was sitting in Shirgari in the Shiva temple. When father was bathing in the tank, son was sitting there, 3-year-old, and Shiva and Parvati appeared there. And child was crying with hunger. Mother, Sri Parvati came and fed her. She gave the milk to her. And the little boy felt very happy. He was so hungry at that time. So, later on his father comes from the tank after bathing. Shivapadaka there was his name. He comes and asks his son, who gave you the milk? Because milks were dropping from the mouth. Little child, isn't it? So, the child says, pointing his hand to the deity, Matrabhudeshara deity there, he came on top of the bull with his wife together and the mother gave me the milk. And that's the day he became Jnanasambandar. Jnanasambandar lived only 16 years in this world and then he left this world. So you can see here that the when we receive that mercy from Krishna, in whichever way it comes, that Krishna is looking for that heart of a devotee. That is what he wants from a devotee, the heart. In the Bhagavatam, you will see this in the Ambarish Maharaj story, in the 9th canto. There he says, Sadhunam Hridayam Ahyam. If you look in the 9th canto, 4th chapter, there is a verse there, 68th verse, 9th canto. There he mentions this. Fourth chapter, 9:4, and I think the verse is 68. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam sadhunam hridayam tvaham madanyadena janandi taham tebhyo managabi. Sadhavo 9:4:68. Sadhavo hridayam mahyam sadhunam hridayam tvaham madanyadena janandi naham tebhyo managabi. Krishna mentions there, the pure devotees, they are my heart, their heart is me, and they don't know anything except me, and me too don't know anything except them. I don't know anything outside, apart from them. They also know only about me, nothing else they know. So that is what that verse is talking about. So, and in other words, Krishna keeps devotees always in his heart, and it is these devotees, what Krishna is mentions there, it is their symptoms that Krishna is talking about now from these verses. We are not talking about us devotees. Krishna is talking about those devotees who Krishna considers as devotees. Adveshta sarvabhutanam maitra karuna evaja nirmamo nirahangara samadukha sukhakshami sandushta sadadam yogi Yatalma dridanishchayaha may arpidamano buddhir yomal bhakta same priyaha. So from now on, it is those verses that it is important what Krishna is going to talk about from now. So here in the Taittiriya Upanishad, to understand a little bit better these things, qualities, important to go back to the Upanishads and see from there how they discuss. Because I mentioned before, we have to know the difference between Shanti, Anandam, Sukham. All these things are not the same. They are all different. And how do we understand the difference between the two? Between all these things, isn't it? This understanding will come from Upanishads. Upanishads will give us a very clear picture of that. The Rishis, the sages, they are saying there, in the Upanishads you will use this word Shanti a lot. Shanti samardham amidam. That means Brahmam, upasana of the Brahmam is done in such a way that samardha Shanti. Samardha Shanti means plenty, in plenty. So there the word is Shandoyam Alma. That means upasana is performed in such a way. Brahmam's nature is defined in the Upanishads as Shanti. Shanti is the nature. This Shanti is the state where one has no mind, when there is no mind inside. If a person is in Shanti, if you look at that person, you will see he has no mind. He has no mind. When you say this to someone, people will get frightened. I'm going to lose my mind. They'll say, worry about it. But that is a realized state. There is no mind in the self-realized state. In other words, mind is nothing but chitavrti, isn't it? Vijaram, thoughts keeps coming one after the other. So that is why we say peace of mind. Peace of mind is not a correct word. It has no meaning. If there is a mind, there will be no peace. If there is peace, it means there is no mind. The word peace of mind is a, what they say, misnomer, isn't it? It's a, not a proper way to say that. So from the spiritual side, the spiritual point of view. Materially, I don't know how what they say, what they mean by peace, what they mean by mind, I don't know. From spiritual point of view, if there is peace, there is no mind. If there is mind, there is no peace. Mind has to be, mind is a disturbance from the chit shakti. Inside, in the chit energy, chit shakti, a vibration has started. From there, the mind has woken up. And that's what we are experiencing throughout the day, which drives us mad from morning waking up right up to the point you go to bed. That's what he's telling us to do. So many things, and we keep doing that without any further thoughts behind it. So that's what Krishna says here. So when there is mind, there is no shanti. When there is mind, there is no shanti. When there is shanti, there is no mind. This we have to first accept it. We'll come why it is like that. So that is why Krishna is saying here, Tyagal Shanti Anandaram, he says. Tyagal Shanti Anandaram. The benefit of having Tyagam is Shanti. When Karma Bhala Tyagam, what Krishna mentions there, isn't it? Last verse. Shreyohi Jnanam Abhyasal, Jnanal Dhyanam Vishishyade, Dhyanal Karma Bhala Tyagam, Tyagal Shanti Anandaram. Yeah? So you can see there, Krishna is saying, the result of this Tyagam will be Shanti. Think through it. It will happen. A stage comes in life for great, great personalities. They have confirmed this. They have done, sacrificed everything in their life for the others, for others. Due to that sacrifice, they reach that state of Shanti inside. So here, that is what Krishna is saying here. When you engage in bhogam, bhogam means sense enjoyment, you get sukham. When you engage in bhogam, suppose you had a nice, wonderful feast, that's bhogam. From bhogam, what happens? Sukham will come. When sukham comes, whereas when you engage in tyagam, from bhogam comes sukham, from tyagam comes shanti. That is the difference. From bhogam comes sukham. From tyagam comes shanti. If that is understood, then you got the message properly. It is not an intellectual understanding. You just have to, your own way, you have to analyze it within. And you will see this. That is how the world goes. In the world, it is like that. From bhogam comes sukham. From tyagam comes shanti. Bhoga means sense enjoyment. From that, we get happiness, sense enjoyment. Now, everyone in this world, sometime or the other, you may have experienced a sham shanti. Everybody experienced some shanti, sometime or the other. For example, you are traveling in a bus and a very old person who is not very well and he needs a seat. You got up and gave him a seat. He sat down. You feel shanti inside. Why? By tyagam, by offering that seat to him, you felt a happiness inside by doing that. And that is how, just to give a simple example, that from tyagam, shanti comes. From tyagam, shanti comes. So what is the difference actually? When you get sukham, you get excited. You jump around. I got everything now. Things went very well, isn't it? So that what you experience at that time, when you get bhogam, or you had a nice, lovely feast, right up to this you have eaten and full, and your body, you're feeling very good, and then you want to lie and sleep for some time, or go for a walk or something, and that sukham what you're feeling, that is what is called sukham, that happiness what you experience. The problem with sukham is, after having it some time, then you can't take it anymore. Suppose you had a big feast, then somebody brings, have some more, a liter of sweet rice more. You say, no, I've eaten plenty, I can't eat anymore. Sukham has got that limitation. Shanti has no limitation. The more you have Shanti, you will never say, I had enough of Shanti. I want some Ashanti now. You won't say like that. Because Shanti's nature is like that. Sukham will always, you can only take up to a limit. After that, you say, I can't manage it anymore. I can't have it anymore. Any Sukham if you take, not only eating, all other Sukham also is like that. Any other sense gratification in this world. Suppose you go and watch a football match, two or three football matches you can watch. After that, you will get bored with it. Isn't it? You want a break from that. So, same thing, you go for a musical concert, you watch one or two concerts, you say, it's enough now, let me change something. Sukham's nature is always changing. You cannot stay with one Sukham permanently. Shanti is the opposite. Shanti, you can stay in that state forever. So that is the main thing. Sukham, while experiencing Sukham, this is the subtle difference now between Sukham and Shanti. Sukham, there is a person who is experiencing it. Whereas in Shanti, there is no person who is experiencing it. You see the point there? It is a subtle thing. If you get it, you got it. If you didn't get it, just leave it. That's all I can say. Sukham, there is a person who is experiencing it. In Shanti, there is no person who is experiencing it. Because Shanti is the nature of the soul. Shanti is the nature of the soul. That is why it mentions there that Shanti samardhamimidam. Brahman's nature, Shandoyam Alma. Upanishad statement is this, not I have written it. It's from Upanishad, it's saying Shandoyam Alma. Alma, by very nature, is in Shanti. So if somebody is in a Shanti state, you can take it that he is in very closely with the soul. That's why that Shanti is coming from that person. Shanti is coming from that person. Because he is Shandoyam Alma. He is not in the body, he is not in the mind, he is in the soul, in other words. Just to give you a little different understanding. In the body, in our own body, if you look, actually, we are not connected to this body. It's a very difficult thing to accept it, isn't it? Somebody tells you, you're not connected with the body. What actually connects us with the body is the mind. Yeah? Mind is connecting us with the body. The mind created from the mind only this body has come. It's not anything else. From the mind the body has come. It is through the mind we have the connection with the body. If there is no mind, you won't feel any connection with the body either. You won't feel any connection with the body either. That is why in the realized state, when there is no mind, what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavadam, that Brahmi Sthiti, where Bhagavad Gita Brahmi Sthiti, that stage is like that. There is no connection with the body. So here, similarly, when Sukham is experienced, it's experienced by a person. That means the ego inside is experiencing that Sukham, happiness, what we talk about. And because without a person, pleasure or Sukham is not possible. Without a person, it's not possible. And Shanti is not possible with a person. I don't know whether you get that message point. Shanti is not possible being a person. You are not a person at that time. In Shanti state. In Shanti state, what has happened is, in the vacant state, you identify with the body. You think I am the body, isn't it? In the dream state, you are identifying with the mind. You left the body. And in the deep sleep state, you are not identifying with the body nor with the mind. You are going back to the soul and therefore you are in Shanti there. That Shanti is coming from the soul in the deep sleep. But the only problem in the deep sleep is there is a very thick coverage of ignorance there, ajnanam there, avidya, a thick coating of ajnanam. That is why we are not able to get that state always, all the time. So similarly, the importance is, in vacant state, if you have shanti, you can say this, that you are not in the state of the body, you are not in the state of the mind, you are free from the body and the mind, you are in the position just like in the deep sleep state. That same shanti, what you are experiencing in the vacant state. So, you know, at that point, in the deep sleep state, there is no person, isn't it? Our individuality, personality goes away in the deep sleep state, is it not? In the deep sleep state, you are not conscious of your identity, are you? You are not thinking, I am this, I am that, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a husband, I am a wife, I am an engineer, I am a doctor, I am a brahmana or a kshatriya, or I am a rich man or a poor man. No identity with anything. There is no I am there, is it not? What exists there is shanti. What exists here, there is shanti only. So while shanti, if you are experiencing, there is no person. There is no person when you are experiencing shanti. Similarly, if the same experience comes in the vacant state also, you don't have a person there. Only shanti exists. That is the spiritual consciousness, pure consciousness in other words. Pure consciousness in other words. Whereas, that means personality, ego, individuality, all that goes away at that time. On the other hand, while you are experiencing some sense enjoyment, has to be there. I am having it. I am having a great time. I enjoyed it well. I did this. I did that. Everything, I should be in the front before everything else. So that is that subtle difference between shanti and sukham. If you have understood all these things, then you can understand what Krishna is going to say further from now. Otherwise, it will be very difficult. Because these are subtle things of our own existence in this creation. The human body is like that. We have so many personality in different ways operating within us that in the state of shanti, when Krishna is talking about shanti, shanti, shanti everywhere, how many times shanti is repeated in the Bhagavad Gita? You know that, don't you? That in the second chapter so many times, and yeah, in the 18th chapter a few times, now here it is in the 12th chapter, and you'll see so many places. If you, one day, if you have time, you can go through Bhagavad Gita and note it down how many times Krishna has spoken about shanti, shanti inside. If you at the end, Krishna says, Ishvara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna trishtadi brahmayan sarvabhudani yantrarudhani bharata yantrarudhani bharata tameva sharanam gacha sarvabhavena bharata yal prasadal param shantim sthanam prapsasi shashvatam. 18th chapter, isn't it? Krishna says there. And you can again see in the second chapter, at the very end, if you look, 70, verse 70, apuryamanam jalapratishtam samudramava pravishandi yadvan tatvat kamamyam pravishandi sarve sa shantim apnoti na kamakami. Again shanti, Krishna talks about. Similarly, 71, vihaya kamanya sarvan pumams charadi nispraha nirmamo nirahangara sa shantim adhigachari. There again, Krishna talks about shanti. Talks about shanti. And then, again in the verse, Krishna says, esham brahmistiti partha in 72. That is the state, nainam prapya vimukhyadi stitvasyam andagalabhi brahmanurvanam rachadi, which is also that state of shanti. So, therefore, shanti is a important thing. Shanti is a important thing. Shanti is the goal. Then again, Krishna mentions there that about shanti in the Bhoktaram Yadavasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, isn't it? Sukhradam Sarvabhudanam Yatvamam Shanti Mruchari, Krishna says. So you can look other places also, you will see in the same way, different places, I can't remember. But there are many other places also Krishna talks about shanti, importance of shanti. So that is why we must know what Shanti means and the difference between Shanti and Sukham. Sukham comes from sense gratification, and that you can only handle to some extent, to a limit. You can have it. Afterwards, you don't want that Sukham. You want something else. You want to switch from one to another. Shanti is not like that. Shanti, you can take as much as you like, and you will never feel bored with it, bored with Shanti. You stay in the Shanti. That is the important thing. Then, apart from that, the other thing is, when there is personality or individuality or ego inside, at that time Shanti won't come. Shanti won't come at that time. When there is no pride, there is no false ego, there is no individual ego, personal ego inside, that is when Shanti comes. So, but you can have Sukham when there is individuality and ego, pride inside. You still can have Sukham, or you can have distress also in the same way. So, what is the greatest benediction what Krishna gives to someone? Says there, then when Krishna appears in the heart, Antaryami, what he does is, the greatest thing what Krishna does to us is takes away that ego from inside. That is the greatest mercy from Krishna. The one with which we are fighting all the time in this world, with our own ego. When Krishna takes that away from inside, that is the greatest mercy. Because we suffer from that ego. We suffer from the ego. So when Krishna takes away that Amani Manado Manyo Loga Swami Triloga Drik, in the Vishnu Sahasranamam, Krishna is addressed that. Amani, Krishna has no manam, no pride inside. Never proud of anything. Krishna is never proud. Therefore, he is Amani. That is why when Arjuna says to Krishna, you drive my chariot, Krishna says, yes, I am ready to drive the chariot. Why? Amanitam. That is that. I have no manam inside. Never thinks of himself. This is a spiritual position it is, not based on the body identity, from a spiritual level. Because Krishna knows very well that he is pure spirit, not matter. Abhimanam comes when there is a gross body. Isn't it? Krishna doesn't have a gross body like us. Our gross body comes from Abhimanam, pride inside. Therefore, we have Abhimanam. Krishna has no Abhimanam. Therefore, he is called Amani. Amanitam. Amani Manado Manyaha. What else? He is always willing to offer respects to everybody else. Manada. He respects everyone. Krishna respects everybody. Amanitam, first thing, he doesn't consider himself as a object like us, material body. He doesn't identify with the body, he identifies with the soul. Only is the soul, nothing else. So therefore he has Amanitam in him. He is Manada because he offers respects to everyone. Bhishma says this in the Bhagavadam, that Amani Manado Manyaha. And therefore what has happened? Logaswami Trilogadrik. And there is no one else in this creation who has been offered respect like Krishna. And Krishna offers respects to everywhere because he sees everything as the soul only, not from the platform of the body. So here, the thing what we are discussing was that the prayer says that if Krishna appears in the heart and removes that pride from inside, that is the greatest benediction. So while doing that, Abhimanam is taken away. The pride has been taken away. You can say that Shanti is a kind of an impersonal pleasure. Impersonal pleasure. Because one thing is, when you are experiencing sense enjoyment, and you get a happiness, and or in other words, when you give up that sense enjoyment, when you give up the sense enjoyment, two things. When you are engaged in sense enjoyment, and when you give up sense enjoyment. So suppose you have prepared a nice prasadam at home, and you had a nice feast, and after the feast, that happiness will stay for a couple of hours or so. You'll feel happy about that feast what you had. But according when your hunger keeps, when the food goes in more and more, the hunger gets, hunger goes away from inside. So accordingly, on that basis, your happiness also will come down, isn't it? When you're very thirsty, somebody offers you a nice glass of orange juice or something, cold oranges, you're drinking. But as much as you get plenty of oranges goes afterwards, you don't feel the same happiness what you had when you started drinking. Is it not? In the same way, so sukham is like that. After a while it will go. Then you may eat again after that, and then what will happen? You'll become sick. If you eat after that. So that is the result of sukham. That's the result of sukham. So this is the result of sukham. On the other hand, suppose you have prepared a nice feast and you are about to eat. At that time, a few people came who are very hungry and they want some food very badly. And suppose you are able to give all the food to them and feed them very well. You have sacrificed everything and given them everything what they want. And they ate well. So at that time, inside you, you felt some happiness. That is shanti. That is shanti. That is how we have to understand this. In these three examples, but that means Tyage Nega Amrutattva Manashu. Upanishad says, from Tyagam, sacrifice you keep doing in this world, shanti will keep coming in inside. That is the nature of shanti. If you keep on doing sacrifice in this world, shanti will keep on coming inside. You will feel at the end, feel had happiness inside. That naturally, that is a state, because from Krishna inside, Krishna takes away that karma vasana and empty the bin inside. The bin inside gets emptied. And that is why that shanti is coming in. Now, we are not feeling that shanti because the bin is full. Bin is filled with vasanas and desires. That's why. So, shanti is like that. That shanti. That shanti has no after effect. That's another important thing. Shanti has no after effect. Sukham has after effect, isn't it? As I said, you have eaten a lot, then you eat more, after effect is that you get sick. You get sick. So, whereas any amount of shanti, if you experience, there won't be any problem. You will never experience any problem after that. So, you will say like this, that, okay, you have eaten well, and then you have gone to sleep, and after sleeping, you have eaten so well that when you start sleeping, inside some noise comes from the stomach. Because, and you start, pain develops inside. So this is all the after effect of sukham. Whereas from shanti, no such thing happens. Shanti, no such thing happens. So, not only that, when you start sleeping and if you have eaten certain food, particularly at night, if you have eaten them, it creates a lot of strong dreams inside. I don't know whether you have tried this. Certain types of food. If you take that in the evening, late in the night or some before you go to bed, if you eat a meal, it creates all sorts of dreams inside. So that is the after effect of the sukham. After effect of sukham. On the other hand, when you sacrifice the food and give it to someone who is hungry at that time, it doesn't matter who it is. Even if you give it to your dog, if the dog is hungry, you will see that the dog will wag its tail and it will show its happiness, isn't it? It will show its happiness when it's hungry. So that is why it mentions here, Bhudeshu yat prayachyate, that even for any other living entity, it acknowledges that. So, and therefore, therefore, in the Bhagavatam, they mention there, Bhudalma Vishwabho. Because in every living entity, Krishna is present there, who is responding to the activity. In this world, all of us are connected to each other. We can't live as separate entities. It is not possible. People who try to drive people, break up people, they are doing a very big mistake. because everybody is connected in this world. Normally what happens through politics, war, ego, they create more and more division in the people, isn't it? But in from the spiritual point of view, from a spiritual level, all of us are connected in this creation. Every living entity is connected to each other in one form or the other. And that connection, when it comes to that state, you will know that that connection exists between the living entities. So, just like the dog does, that dog is so satisfied, when you give them the food, you can see how the dog responds to that, isn't it? So, and doesn't mean that you have to get all the dogs and start feeding. That's not what it says. But what I'm saying is that that feeling of happiness that comes from that, even though an animal, but still, it has that shanti, it has that experience from inside, you can see. But the when the dog shows its happiness, what you feel inside, that is shanti. What you feel inside is shanti. So here, sometimes you can see that when we deal with other living entities, for example, the dogs, for example, if you take the dogs itself, dogs want its freedom. They also want their freedom. But what do? We say, oh, we look after you, stay home, not allowing them to go out. They want to go out. They also want to enjoy this world. We won't let them in. So we won't allow that, we'll keep them in. And when one free dog freely walks to the street, it gets envy. It gets fed very well. But that's not all what he wants. It wants something more than that, isn't it? So what so here you can see that when we there's an important lesson to learn here, that in the process of giving, doing good to others, we should not take away its independence or freedom. Its independence or freedom. Because this is one thing what we have to be very careful. When you are doing service to others, you have to be very careful about doing service to others. And behind that service, there should be sufficient thinking behind it. What is that? Without intelligence, love is dangerous. Without intelligence, love is dangerous. It's nice to have some attachment to the dog, but does not mean that you have to bring the dog inside the house and keep him inside your air-conditioned room. That's not what the dog wants. Dog wants to wander around everywhere like his fellow dogs and enjoy its life in this world. So if you're telling him to lock him up, and he's like a prison for that inside the house, isn't it? So what will happen with that dog? That dog will look outside and he'll feel envious about all other dogs who has got freedom in this world. He's got freedom in this world. It's not good enough if you just take the dog outside for a walk for a half an hour in the morning or half an hour in the evening. He wants its freedom. The bird wants its freedom. Every animal wants its own freedom. Like every living entity wants its freedom to move around. So, what can we do? So, to take away somebody else's freedom in the name of service is a wrong thing to do. So, Tyagal Shandihi, he says here. So, Tyagam has to be understood properly. Bhogam is by nature in everybody. Tyagam is not. You see what I'm saying? Very rarely you will see Tyagam in people. Bhogam, you don't have to teach anybody. Isn't it? Bhogam, naturally it is there in everyone. Bhogam. Nobody used to tell me how to enjoy my senses. As soon as I born, it's born with me. How to do it. Same thing everybody. So Bhogam doesn't have to be taught, but Tyagam has to be practiced. That is the difference there. So here you have to see something that in order to develop Shanti, which comes from Tyagam, that is what for sadhana is meant for. Do not misunderstand sadhana means only chanting the holy name or any other things like that. No, sadhana means, for example, in this studying Bhagavad Gita in this way, that's a sadhana actually. To study Bhagavad Gita like this is a sadhana. That means understanding Bhagavad Gita properly is a sadhana itself. So sadhana goes in the opposite direction. In other words, so sadhana means we have a nature in us and we have false ego inside us, isn't it? We have a nature, swabhavam as it is called, and we also have the false ego inside. Traveling opposite way towards that is sadhana. You get that point? That we will act according to our vasana, according to our desires and ahankaram, ego inside, isn't it? And bhoga vasana or in other words nature or ahankaram, whatever it is, dictating to us, we'll act. You going against that is sadhana. Going against that is sadhana. Because you have to think like this. Where did I get this bhoga vasana? How did this come to me, this sense enjoyment? Because why is that we don't have this tyaga vasana? Why this bhoga vasana is so strong in us? This is a question we have to ask. The answer to that question is, we were not like this today, last time. We gone through so many animal bodies. So many animal bodies. In all these animal bodies, you will notice one thing. Bhoga vasana is what they had. They never had any tyaga vasana, very little if they had. They will show some tyagam at some time, but that too only if, just like a mother will show some sacrifice for the babies, things like that. Apart from that, it's purely animal propensity is this bhoga vasana. Sense enjoyment is purely bhoga vasana. And that, because we went through so many bodies, life after life, that vasana became very strengthened inside. And that's why when we suddenly got a human body one day, body is human, but the vasana is all animal. That's why we are like this now. Terrible, eh? Think about it. That nobody likes it when you tell them that you are an animal last many lifetimes. We were like that. Who knows? When Ramchandra's time, we could have been some monkeys there. That's why we are sitting here and hearing Bhagavad Gita now. Otherwise, even that opportunity may not have happened. Or anything like that. So many animal bodies we may have gone through. And in all these animal bodies, what we have acquired is bhoga vasana, not tyaga vasana. Tyagam was never there. So that is why when you come to the human body, combined with this false ego inside, ahankaram, and also this individuality, personality, pride, everything inside, it becomes very difficult to engage in tyagam. In tyagam, it becomes very difficult. And that is why sadhana is necessary. Please do not misunderstand. Sadhana is not only just chanting the round. Generally, people will say like that, I've done my sadhana. We'll say like that. No, sadhana means anything what you are doing to culture spiritual consciousness inside is your sadhana. Whatever you are doing, continuously if you are engaged in a reflection of the Krishna consciousness philosophy, that is sadhana. That, because you are going against that flow of the false ego. This is why I was saying that in all sadhana, the purpose behind that is, at least at that time, you won't act selfishly. To at least for that time, you will act in a selfless way. Otherwise, all the time you are thinking how I can have some enjoyment in this world. So that is why it mentions here. Even now the scientists are saying that if you look into our genes, there is a particular presence of the animals inside. Animals presence in there as well. Anyway, that may be there or not, we don't know. But they are researching into that now. What's our connection with the animals? You see that in the newspapers and always. So, this you can see also. Some plants, when some people look or when they smile, you will see an animal's presence in them. I know you shouldn't say this to anybody, but you have to observe yourself. that's coming from that. That's not their fault. It is brought with them, that vasana has come with them from the previous life. So similarly, their behavior, the way they look, sometimes you will see in some people, like fox-like they are. They very calculative and very conscious of what's going on around, and while dealing with people in a very business-like, a very calculated behavior like that, and very, very, very shrewd. We call it a shrewdness, but actually it is that fox quality. It must have gone to the fox body previous life and came to the human body. So brought that fox nature with him, and it comes out in that way. Like that, similar things you will see in different living entities, different human species, different nature like that. And that different nature is coming from different animal bodies, what we have acquired. So you can see here, all these nature, different animals, you can see in the human species, in the human species. And sometimes you can see, when you study the dogs also, you can see in them some nature, which are very interesting. Sometimes you will see all of them are like human beings, some of them. So, when we see that, when you see the loyalty and the gratitude sometimes with the dogs, when they exhibit like that, you may sometimes think, oh, they are like human species, they have got such a nice behavior. It's not that they are, but because sometimes you see some of the qualities of the dog you see in human beings. Some of the qualities of the dogs you see in the human beings. All these things are within us anyway. That means this pleasure-seeking center, the ahankaram inside, therefore, it is always looking for to get something, to enjoy something. So, and that is the nature of an animal. That's the nature of an animal. It's looking for pleasure, it's looking for happiness all the time. That is the very nature of an animal. So that when that pleasure-seeking center is very strong inside, you will see all his activities are like the animal. So, when it comes to human body, it keeps going down. It keeps going down. And when that animal propensity keeps coming down, then his human propensity becomes stronger inside. And somewhere around, when it is 50% animal and 50% human being, that is when he starts finding some interest in hearing Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is when you start somewhere around 50% animal, 50% human being. So, but still he won't be completely interested. For example, if you are 99% animal and 1% human being, you will have a human body, but and we may take him as a human. When you take the census, population census, you will take him as a in the human population, but actually he is not. He's 99. Actually, if you take the population, the dogs, you have to include him in that, strictly speaking, not in the human population. We are taking the external body and taking the census and saying we are 60 million in living in England or UK. We say 60 million or something, or 1.2 billion in India or 1.5 billion in China, we say. But that has no meaning actually, because some people who are 99% animal and 1% human, only the body is human, inside is animal. How are you include him in the human population? How can you include him? So that's also wrong. Everything in Vyavaharam is false. Lying, cheating, this is all goes on in the Vyavaharam. Everything is like that. But you can't say this to the government. Government won't not going to accept that, would they? So when this animal propensity keeps coming down, which means selfishness keeps reducing, going away from inside, then you become a human being. In the Shastram, human being is defined like that. Not that you've got two hands, two legs, two eyes and nose and two ears and a head and you're standing vertical, that means you become a human being. Shastram don't accept that. Shastram says when the animal propensity has gone away from inside and then you are considered to be a human being. And that he mentions there that this animal nature, when it goes away and it becomes and something like 51% human being and 49% animal, that is when you feel a little bit inclination for the soul, knowledge of the soul, spiritual life and things like that, you get interested in that. And that you can see also, it is that time you start popping in and seeing what's going on here. And then you may probably take Bhagavad Gita and have a look at it, and both sides you will look and you will see, oh, it's a nice picture, who is riding this horse chariot. You may ask one or two questions and put it back and you'll go. You will see this type of people coming all the time. And the such people won't go take the Bhagavad Gita and start reading it or thinking about it. Such a thing won't happen. So it is only then that sometimes they'll come and make a comment and then they will walk away. They'll walk away. So so it is in that sometimes they will they will come to hear something about Krishna from Krishna consciousness somewhere, and then suddenly they may develop some interest, and accordingly their animal nature will leave them and human nature will start coming up strongly. So so this process goes on like this, and slowly about 70% they have come up to the human state. And when they have in that state, about 70% human, 30% animal, that is when they are able to sit and start listening something. Then start, sit and start listening. When you discuss Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, attention, you will become a little serious at that time. Interest will come somewhere around 70%. Not exactly 70%, somewhere around 70%. When you get that more human nature in us, and then animal nature leaves us, then you feel more interested. But then what happens is you will feel sleepy at that time. At that time you will feel a desire to sleep. Still it will be there in that state. So according to the animals' percentage in us, in the same proportion we will feel sleepy. We will sleep because that sleeping nature also has come from the same body previously what we had. So nobody to be blamed for that. It's just that we have gone through that body, we have got it, collected it from there, that happiness from the sleep. And then by about 80% or 90% when you become to that, only then you will become a little bit more deeply absorbed in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. And also a desire will build up inside, I need Bhagavad Gita, I need Bhagavatam. And that serious attention in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam will come at that time. By about 80%, 90% when you become that the genuine interest develops in that. You can see in a natural way, some people have their natural desires inside. They want to hear Bhagavad Gita and no other business in this world. Some people have that nature. And similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, they don't want anything else, no attraction for anything else. If it's happening inside, you can take it that the animal percentage has gone quite a bit from inside. The human percentage has come up very well inside. That's an indication of that. That's an indication of that. 100% when it becomes like that, he has become like, he's not a human being anymore. He's not a human being anymore. He is as good as Krishna in that way. Because this human body is not given any importance in that sense. That, of course, the census people and the population, for them, they look at the body and they are measuring everything. Based on the body, they are telling us things, isn't it? So, only when in Krishna, when the animal percentage increases, that is when human body is born. Human body is born at that time. When in Krishna, Krishna is the soul, isn't it? So soul is Krishna. In there, when the animal percentage, if you keep adding to it, it becomes a human being in different forms. Human being in different forms. So animal is not referred to a particular living entity, but rather it is that selfishness inside. That is what is called animal. So, animal means what? Always desiring to enjoy. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Nothing else in this life except to enjoy. So, when that propensity becomes very strong in a person, then he is in the animal's stage. So, for him, for a person who has gone very high, developed that human percentage very high and very low percentage of animals, for him, importance is not enjoy, rather this desire for acquiring the knowledge of the soul. Self-realization becomes the priority for him. That is why when he knows that, he is in a state there, he gives importance to self-realization more than sense gratification. Krishna is saying that state is Shanti. It is only in Shanti because for him the importance is Shanti more than Sukham. For animal, happiness is Sukham. For a human being, happiness is Shanti. You get that? That Shanti is the one what human being is looking for. But in this body now, if I'm looking for Sukham all the time, it means the percentage of animal in me is very high, 80-90% or 95%. I'm not too interested in the Shanti. I'm interested in the Sukham. So as long as that side is pulling me towards the Sukham side, then I can understand that animal percentage in me is very strong still. Whereas if the spiritual side, Shanti side, knowledge side, self-realization side is pulling me in that direction, then it is important that I know that the animal percentage is not very strong in me. That's the way one has to look at oneself. So, so that Shanti, when you experience at that stage, Jnanis, they call it as Anandam. When they come to that state, Jnanis, they call it as Anandam. Because Anandam is not excitement. It is not Sukham either. It is not the pleasure. Then, so what is Anandam means? When you have continuous experience of that Shanti, inside you experience a fullness. Purnada, they call it in the Upanishad. The word they used is Purnada. Purnatvam. A perfection inside. No desiring anything. Don't want anything. Complete freedom from the karma. Complete freedom from the enjoyment mood. And totally stable inside. No mind inside. In that state, it is Anandam. So we have got Sukham, we have got Shanti, we have got Anandam. That Anandam is when totally realized the state, then Satta Chitta Anandam, bliss as they call it, isn't it? The bliss is the word for that. Bliss comes and that is pure the Anandam or Brahmanandam, they call it. Another word, Brahmanandam Viladi Ajiral Sambhavoma Vyoga, it says in the Bhagavatam. So, it is not Sukham. That another thing is, in Sukham there is coming and going. Is it not? Sukham comes and Sukham can go also. Sukham has also got after effect also. And you also know that if you have a lot of Sukham you had, Dukham will follow. It's always like that. You may think that everything is going on very well, nicely. If somebody asks you, how are you? Fine, thank you. You say like that and you walk away after 10 minutes, some problem has come back to you, something else. So nobody can live in this world with Sukham alone. That is the one important thing. So, to extent you are trying to enjoy Sukham in this world, equally you have to suffer Dukham also. So, therefore, one doesn't have to learn how to enjoy Sukham, how to experience Sukham. But But to give up Sukham, one has to put effort to learn how to give up Sukham in this world, happiness in this world. And to give up that Sukham and to learn to live in this world is sadhana. Is sadhana. To give up that Sukham in that way. So for example, suppose I'm sitting in this chair, I could sit on the floor as well. And somebody else came who cannot walk or who's finding it difficult to sit on the floor. You offer the chair to that person. And he sat there in that chair. And maybe it may be a little difficult for me to sit on the floor. But you are sacrificing your happiness at that time. The sukham that you are getting from sitting in the chair, you are giving up for another person's happiness. But when he sat there and he's sitting there, and when you watch that, we feel a happiness inside, and that is what that is what Krishna says, Tyagam. That is Tyagam. So you will notice there, Tyagat Shandihi. Tyagal Shandihi. Tyagal Shandihi. Have you seen that word? In the last verse it was there. Shreyohi Jnanam Abhyasad. That is verse 12. Jnanal dhyanam vishishyate, dhyanal karma bhalatyagam, tyagal shandi anandaram. So from tyagam, shandi will come. That is the principle. So more tyagam happens, shandi will keep coming all the time. Shandi will keep coming all the time. That is the nature of the shandi. So here, Krishna is saying that engage in tyagam. Krishna says engage in tyagam because our habit normally will oppose tyagam. Will, that is our habit is. Who opposes that from inside? Our ego. False ego inside will go against that. It will not allow that. So, so that we have to reverse that process. Instead of holding on to something, to leave it behind. That is the principle. Instead of taking from someone, give it to somebody. So, if we develop that, that is the very center point of bhakti. Bhakti's center point is that tyagam. Tyagam is the bhakti. So, this tyagam or sacrifices makes a person a devotee. So, so it is due to that tyagam, Krishna gets pleased with a devotee. And where he gets pleased, Krishna is pleased with him, and therefore Kapila Vasudeva says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can look, you will see that in the third canto, in the 29th chapter, Kapila Vasudeva's statement, if you look, what he says about that. 329, verse number 27. Adhammam, 329, 27. Adhammam sarvabhudeshu bhudalpanam kridalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitra abhinena chakshushaha. He says, Athamam sarvabhudeshu bhudalpanam kridalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitreya abhinena chakshusham. Athamam sarvabhudeshu, he says here, bhudalpanam kridalayam, that all living entities, that's verse 27, all living entities who is present inside them as Antaryami, Krishna, who is present in everyone. One, when he offers with charity and respect, Dhanamanabhyam, Arhayed. If you worship everyone in that way, Arhayed Dhanamanabhyam, Maitriya Abhinena Chakshusha, Maitri, with friendship. And Abhinetvam. Abhinetvam means that equal vision. It is Krishna who is present in that person. In that way, if you treat people, if you respect people in that way, not look up to people and think, oh, he is rich, so I'll make contact with him. Somebody else is poor, oh, I'll not bother for him. Not in that way. Looking in every living entity, Krishna is saying here, Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi, that Athamam Sarva Bhudeshu, in all living entities, Bhudalpanam Krutalayam, knowing well that I am present inside, Krishna is present inside, Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam, offering everything to that Andaryami inside that person. You are not offering to his false ego. You are offering to Krishna who is present inside that person. While giving prasadam to someone, or while giving clothes to someone, or any charitable activity like that, if it is conducted in this way, then it is spiritual. If it's not, it's not spiritual. When we give prasadam, food or for clothes or anything, Krishna is saying that you have to know that to whom you are giving this. You are giving to that Andaryami inside that person. Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam Maitri, and that should be given with full happiness, one should give it. Abhinyena Chakshusha, knowing very well that it's the same person who is receiving in everyone. You see, suppose 100 people are taking prasadam, one should not think that all 100 people are different people. Krishna is eating through these 100 mouths. That is the mode of giving prasadam to people. Not that 100 people came, I gave 100 people prasadam, they had 100 people have eaten. No, Krishna has eaten through 100 mouths. Through 100 mouths, Krishna has eaten. That's what Bhagavatam is saying. That aham mam athamam sarva bhudeshu bhudalpanam kritalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitri, and that should be given. You should not think he is my friend, I give him more prasadam, somebody else is my, I won't give any prasadam to him. Not in that way. That is not giving prasadam. That is squaring up all your anger with him. Giving prasadam should not be like that. Giving prasadam, everyone. So, arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitreya abhinyena chakshusha. This is important thing. We have to know these things. Otherwise, what we will do? Somebody comes to the temple. Oh, he's a VIP. He gives a lot of money. I'll take him upstairs and give him a nice feast. Somebody else who comes, he says, he doesn't give anything. So why should we give him so much? Give him some rice and dal and send him a khichdi and send him away. All this, Dvaita Buddhi will come. Veda Buddhi it's called. Veda Buddhi, once it comes, it's very difficult to take it out. Same thing you will see in many times with people, this Veda Buddhi. Veda Buddhi is a big danger. That not to respect that Andaryami inside, rather seeing the persons purely based on the body and start treating them in that way. It's worse than not giving anything. Because it creates so much dvandvam inside, Dvaita Buddhi, or the risky way of doing that. So that's what Krishna is saying here. Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinyena Chakshusha. So in everyone I am present, Krishna says, and Dhanamanabhyam Pujaye. And so somebody comes hunger, you have to give him food. You have to give him food. And it's not, and that is, Krishna says, that is a worship more than offering him flowers or offering him doing a deity worship or anything more important than that. That's how importance Krishna gives to that. So while discussing bhakti, these things has to be very clearly understood. Otherwise we won't understand bhakti. We will understand something else. But bhakti will simply become a set of rituals otherwise. We'll do something because that's what we understood about bhakti. We'll sing, dance and we'll go home thinking that we understood bhakti. But bhakti is a very big science, and that 12th chapter is all centered around the how, when bhakti develops in a heart, how that person acts in this world. That's what that chapter talks about. So we'll have a short break now. So that verse 13, Adveshta sarvabhudanam maitra karuna evaja nirmamo nirahangara samadukha sukhakshami Sandushta sadadam yogi yadalma drada nishchayaha may arpidamano buddhir yomad bhakta same priyaha. Krishna is saying there, isn't it? So you can see here, Advaishta Sarvabhudhanam, Krishna begins that. Advaishta Sarvabhudhanam means that na dveshta atmano dukhahedam abhi na kaschil dveshti sarvani bhudani atmatvenahi pashyati. That is how it's explained that. In other words, what it means is na dveshta atmano dukhahedam, because he is seeing himself that if somebody behaves in such a way that it causes distress within himself, even then he does not, he thinks that it has come from the soul. Almatvenahi pashyati. In other words, you know, dvesham. Dvesham means ragam dvesham, isn't it? Dvesham means aversion, or you can say sometimes hate towards somebody. So ragam dvesham, attachment and aversion. So advaishta sarvabhudanam, in order to develop that nature of no dvesham towards other living entity, Krishna is saying here that dvesta atmano dukhahedam. So atmano dukhahedam means if oneself, how he feels unhappy when someone behaves in a offensive way, he shouldn't feel unhappy, because what he does is he thinks that it's coming from the Atma, from the other person. Atma from the other person. Kaschit dveshti sarvani bhudani atmatvenahi pashyati. In everyone there is swarupam and there is swabhavam. Swabhavam is the nature of a person. Swarupam, in swarupam we are all same. All spirit, isn't it? Everybody is spirit soul. So we are swarupam, we are all same. In swabhavam, everybody is different. In nature, everyone is different. So Krishna, it mentions, advaishta sarvabhudanam na dveshta atmano dukhahedam. Because all living entities, he is saying the presence of Krishna inside him, and therefore dukkhahedam abhi na kaschil dveshti sarvani bhudani atmatvenihi pashyati. Even if others become a cause of distress to him, he would not think, develop any ill feeling towards that person, knowing very well that Krishna's presence in there, in that person as well. That's the only way you can get out of it. Otherwise, it will grow inside. It will grow inside. That is the principle. Advaishta sarvabhudanam Maitra Karuna Evajam. Krishna says that that Maitra Karuna Evajam. Maitra means Mitra Bhav. Mitra Bhav. Maitri Mitradaya Vartade Idi Maitra. Always in a friendly disposition to others. In a loving, nicely, friendly relationship with others. Karuna Evajam. Karuna Kripa Dukhideshu Daya. Tadvan Karuna Sarva Bhuda Bhaya Pradaha Sanyasi Ityartaha. In other words, one who is in distress, show mercy to him. When somebody is in distress, show mercy to him. And one who gives protection to everybody, abhayam, or protection to him, Maitra Karuna Evacha, such a person is a sannyasi. A sannyasi's real nature is like that. Sannyasi's, perfect sannyasi's behavior will be like that. Mercy to everybody, especially to those who are in distress, and protection to everyone. He feels shelter to others. This is what we have to observe in the sannyasi. If that relationship is like that, then it is correct. But normally what happens, oh, I'm a sannyasi now. So where's my maha? Or where's this is not sannyasam. This is not a very sannyasi nature. Sannyasi's nature is like that. Others are suffering, especially to those who are in distress, showing the mercy to them. And also to those, anyone coming to him, give them shelter. Able to give shelter to them. That is a sannyasi's position. Karuna sarvabhuta bhaya pradaha sannyasi ityartaha. Normamam. then it says nirmam. Nirmamo mama pratyaya varjito nirahangaro nirgadaham pratyaha samadukha samaha sukha same dukha sukhe dvesha ragayoho apravartaye yasya samadukha sukha. Krishna is saying this. Nirmamo nirahangara samadukha sukha kshami. Nirmama means no mamata anywhere, no attachment in anything. Everything, whatever happens, it happens. Leaving it like that. And nirahangaraha, no aham inside, personality or ego, individuality there. Freedom from that. Samadukaham. Samadukaha means that both in happiness and distress when it comes, not losing is balance of mind. And in other words, there is no ragam, no dvesham anywhere. That is what those four qualities Krishna is talking about. Adveshta sarvabhudanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahangara samadukha sukha kshami. Kshami means kshami kshamavan akrishtaha abhihato va avikriya eva aste. In other words, if you are cursed or if you are insulted and still not losing your peace inside, that is kshama. What Krishna says like that. So, we were talking about this verse before, that in the Bhagavadam, Krishna, Kavila Vasudev says to Devahuti Devi, that Athamam Sarobodeshu Maitreya Abhinena Chakshusha mentions there, isn't it? So, Krishna says here, that Arhaye Dhyanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinena Chakshusha. That is that verse, says there. This is an important verse and just to be understood also very well. Otherwise, we will not understand bhakti otherwise. We will, most of the time what happens, people take that bhakti is nothing but a lot of rituals. I've chanted a lot, I've danced a lot, I've ate a lot of prasadam, I worshipped the deity, I went home. What has changed? A couple of hours, I had a good entertainment, that's all. That's what it became. That is not bhakti. Bhakti, when Krishna is talking about bhakti, that's why this particular chapter, 12th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, is so important to understand what is bhakti. That's why first 12 verses in this 20 verses, Krishna spoke about bhakti, what it is. And the remaining 8 verses, Krishna is presenting to us a person who is a devotee. How he acts in this world, his behavior, his nature, what he will be like. That's why it's saying. So it is in that connection in Kapila Vasudev says to Devahuti Devi, Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinena Chakshusha. I am present in everything, every personal, every living entity. And Dhanamanabhyam Pujayed, he says there, isn't it? Not that you worship it with the flowers, but that kind of worship is there. For example, in the olden days, what they used to do, that for example, say among the, in family life, when husband-wife relationship is not going very well, there's problems like that. So, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there, if you worship Sri Parvati, they say it's good dambatyam. Dambatyam means good family life, you can expect from that. So, what they used to do, they will invite some old Brahmana couple. Some old Brahmana couple, very poor, they will be very poor people. And they will offer them a nice worship at home, give them a nice feast, and then offer them some good amount of cash or whatever to please them and pay their respects to them by obeisances to them and somehow try to please them in that way. So the principle behind that is this, that those who need something, give something to them and please them in some way. In that case, if there is any disturbances in our family life and if you give them something in their family life that pleases them, then if you are qualified or if you are entitled, you will get that happiness in life. Provided you have to be entitled for that, only then. Sometimes it can happen. So due to some reason that in family life, something is not working very well. So sometimes problems come, isn't it? I mean, every family life is problem, but it's not that it's problem free. But even there is to be a lot of, if you can tolerate each other and survive in this world, that is the only escape route. There's no other way. But if there is a problem, sometimes they used to do like this. Considering if this Brahmana couple, Shiva and Parvati, they will receive them home, and offer them worship in that way and feed them well and then offer them nice prasadam and give them something to help. There will be very poor people for such people. They offer them like that. So, Dampati Puja, they call it. The worship of the Dampati is like that. So Uma, they have a certain mantra, Uma Maheshwara Abhyaya Namaha, that Uma and Maheshwara has come, Shiva and Parvati has come, and sit there and then give them some dakshina and all that. Now, this worship, what used to be like that, what has happened in later days now, it's taken a completely disgusting tone. It has become, we'll go to some holy places. Then they will, these pandas there, they will tell you that, well, you know, you have to feed so many brahmanas, will say. And they will try to extract as much cash as they can from you. You give them the cash. And then he will, to show you that he has given the food to so many people, he will invite some local brahmanas who are regularly receiving these funds in this way, invite them and give them food. And at the end, the person who has given the money, he curses them all and he goes away from there. Because by then he had a fight with the panda there. Then he gets completely... This happens all the holy places you will see. It happens in Vrindavan, it happens in Benares, it happens in Gaya. Wherever you go, you will see this constantly happening there. So the whole very spirit behind that is gone. And then you leave the place in a total misery. But... there, you will see they are chanting the mantra and all that, but there is no spirit. So, mantra is not important, the spirit is important. You see, that is what I am saying, that when Kapila Vasudeva says, Adhammam Sarvabhudeshum Maitreya Abhinayana Chakshusha, that principle involved in that is more important. Yeah, he says here, Adhammam Sarvabhudeshum Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinayana Chakshusha. Only in that consciousness, if you do that, it will have the benefit. But now what happens? A lot of people, you will see this all the time happening. You go to many of these holy places. We go there with a good heart, but within a few days, you get fed up with everything, what happens there, and gets very disturbed over it. And then if you can ask devotees, there are different experiences people had with all that, and then they come home after that. So if you know the principle behind it, the principle is this, what Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavatam, that Adhamam Sarvabhudeshu, what is that verse? Adhamam Sarvabhudeshu, I don't know. Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinayana Chakshusha. 3:29:27. Adhamam Sarvabhudeshu Bhudalmanam Kridalayam. That's important. Then Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinayana Chakshusha. Adhamam Sarveshu Bhudeshu. First to know that. Bhudalmanam Kritalayam. Krishna is present there inside them as Krishna's presence inside. Bhudalman, as the soul. Krishna is present in everyone. Bhudalmanam Kritalayam. Krishna says there. Kavidavasudeva says there. Athamam Sarveshu Bhudeshu Bhudalmanam Kritalayam. Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam. Arhaye Dhanamanabhyam. Dhanam and Manam. Both. Arhaye. According to the qualification, you give that. And Maitreya Abhinayana Chakshusha. Friendship to them and not seeing any dvandvam in there. No duality in them. Seeing them on an equal level as the Krishna's presence inside them. Maitreya Abhinayana Chakshusha. In that way we should see them. If you do that, Krishna is saying there that Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi, that is considered bhakti. That is bhakti. This is how bhakti to be understood. Bhakti, otherwise we will misunderstand bhakti. So here, Arhaye Dhanamanam, so then he says, even if you don't chant any mantra, even if you don't offer any flowers, still, without all that, first that bhavam inside, the mood inside towards that person, and that is why it is mentioned like that. Even if you do that without knowing all these things, if you simply accept that in everyone whom you come to get to know in this world, if you just to recognize that the presence of Krishna in a person, that itself is bhakti. That itself is bhakti. That itself is bhakti. So, but what normally happens is bhakti develops into rituals. Ritualism is not rejected, but ritualism tends to act without bhavam behind it. No bhavam in this worship. Yeah, there's no bhavam there. It simply becomes a ritual. Then it is very dangerous. Very dangerous. There was once one yogi, Seshadri Swamiji. He was wandering around in the town because he was a jnani like that. And when he was wandering around like that, some devotees there thought that we must offer our respects to Swamiji in a nice way. So, because they were not, often you will notice this problem that some people, they will not understand anything. They'll just do things all the time. They'll be doing. According to their idea, they will do things like that. So what they did was, they thought that we should offer some tender coconut water to him and we'll perform an abhishek on him with the tender coconut water. So they brought a lot of coconuts and cut them all and with the coconut water poured on his head and forcefully did this to him, and the result was that he got cold at the end. So things like that happens when it is done in that way. And this you will observe with many, many sannyasis. When they have understanding, they will avoid such situation. So, once Abhedananda Swamiji, one great sannyasi like this, Abhedananda Swamiji went to so many places, and devotees took him to different homes, for they had that bhajans at home. They took him there. He went to all the houses and everybody was offering him milk everywhere. They offered him milk. And he drank everywhere the milk. And those who were walking along with him, they got surprised at that. So, they asked him about that. He said, I was drinking the milk, not that I needed milk anymore. But what will please that person? I was thinking that. I did that, he said. That is what it is. Ahamam sarabodeshu bodhalmanam krithalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitreya abhinena chakshusha. So, in order to do that, what will please Krishna who is present within that person? What will please him? To know that and to act in that way, you require intelligence. You require the intelligence. That is where, when that you have that intelligence, the bhakti becomes parabhakti. When one develops the right intelligence by which one can please everyone in this world, same time, and when he is able to do that, knowing very well how to please a person, not for a sense gratification, rather please the super soul who is present within him as Atma, Krishna who is present within him. If he is able to please Krishna's presence in every living entity, then his bhakti is parabhakti. That is how we understand parabhakti. We are thinking parabhakti means we'll go to the heavenly planets or to Vaikuntha planet or Golokam, and there we'll be doing something different than what we are doing here, isn't it? No, it's not like that. You see, living entities' relationship is so strong with each other. When we start recognizing Krishna, first verse Krishna said this, Adveshta sarva bhudanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahangara samadukha sugakshami sandushta sadadam yogi yadalma drada nishchaya mai arpita manobuddhir yamad bhakta samepriya. Krishna is saying, such a devotee is very dear to me, he says. Why? You can see there all these qualities has nothing to do with our deity worship, nothing to do with our individual sadhana, is it? Nothing is mentioned there. So why Krishna is talking about bhakti like this? Whereas if you read other literature, any other bhakti literature, you will see so many other things mentioned, which is all a part of sadhana. But what Krishna is explaining here, the devotee whom he likes. This is the difference. The other things what we are doing is to purify our chitta shuddhi. For our purification inside, we have to do sadhana, we do various things. That's another thing. But the devotee whom Krishna considers his devotee is this. That's what why Bhagavad Gita is to be understood that way. This Bhakti Yogam chapter is very different than the many other places where you study. Bhakti Sutram is there, Narada Bhakti Sutram also is similar lines it's written. So here you can see that that when we know that in every body, every living entity, when Krishna's presence, and to know that presence of Krishna, to recognize that, and to act in such a way that Krishna, who is present within that body, will be pleased by our activity. To do that, you require intelligence and knowledge. You require intelligence and knowledge. Only then it will happen. And it is only behind that bhakti, what you have in that way, that is what is developed as parabhakti. So, for example, a person who comes hungry, to give him food, and one who doesn't have clothes, to give him clothes. If you cannot do anything else, at least a respects to him. Namaskaram. Arhaye dhanamanabhyam. Krishna is saying like that. Without, and or even to smile in a loving way. All that is bhakti. So, and that is the worship. Now, there is an interesting story about this. Ramanujacharya's life. Ramanujacharya's, a very interesting incident this is. Very, very interesting. How Ramanujacharya handled this situation in his own life. Remember, Ramanujacharya used to live in Srirangam, Ranganatha temple. He spent a lot of time there, daily discussing Ramayanam. And hundreds and thousands of people come and listen to him at that time, because he was so good in explaining Ramchandra's pastime. And he explained that, and he had many, many disciples with him at that time. So, one day, a very, very old Brahmana came up to him and told Ramanujacharya that I want to do some service to you. They call that as Kaingaryam. Kaingaryam means the word Kingara. Kingara means servant. Kaingaryam means a servant service in that way, in that mood. If you want to do something, it's called Kaingaryam. So he said, I want to do some Kaingaryam. The old man says, please don't reject me. I want to do something for you, he said. So he says to him, give me something what will please you. That's how he told Ramanujacharya. He said, tell me something what I should do that will please you, he said. Ramanuja says to him, so your intention is that you want to do something that will please me, isn't it? Ramanuja says to him. He says, yeah, so then I'll tell you something and you have to do that, he said. He says, I'll do it. The Brahmana, old Brahmana says, I'll do that. For a long time, I have been desiring within myself, he said, that I want to invite a Brahmana and I just want to do my worship of Ranganath in the temple. And after doing the worship, I want to keep that Brahmana. I want to wash his feet. I want to wash his feet. And then I want to pay obeisances to him. Only after that, I want to have my food, bhiksha. This is a sannyasi at that time. I want to have my bhiksha only after that, he said. But because I am a sannyasi, I have asked many people and nobody is willing to do that. To that time, sannyasis were in that level, that they were respected that way. So nobody was willing to accept this request from Ramanuja. Ramanuja says, after doing the deity worship, I want to wash your feet. And then only after paying my obeisances, I want to take my bhiksha, he said. So that is what I wanted, he said. All my disciples have told them, they have all run away. They were not willing to do that, he said. So will you be willing to do that, he says to this Brahmana. Brahmana says, if that is what is going to please you, I am willing to do that, he said. Because normally it's considered to be very sinful to ask a sannyasi to wash your feet and then allowing him to pay obeisances to you. It will be very embarrassing to it, isn't it? So, So this happened, this incident happened at that time, and Brahmana came one day and he will come and sit in front of him and he will do this worship of this Brahmana and take the water and the tirtham and pour it on his head. So the people who are seeing this, they thought themselves, what kind of bhakti is this? That Guru is worshipping the disciple. Guru is worshipping the disciple, and Shishya is sitting, so the disciple is sitting there to accept the Guru's worship, isn't it? So they were not very happy about it. So they told them, and they started discussing with Ramanuja about this. They started raising a question. So Ramanuja says to him, Ramanuja didn't say one word, and the Brahmana also didn't say anything about this incident. So Ramanuja is continuing this worship for quite some time, and the Brahmana was sitting for this every time. So one day it so happened, after a long time, this continued for a long period of time. One day it so happened, Ramanujacharya, normally instead of coming to that house for this service, he wandered around and gone somewhere else. So, and he spent a lot of time in somebody else's house. And after all that, Ramanuja came back here to this house after a long delay, he came back here late in the night. So when he came back, this Brahmana was standing in front of the house with hands folded, hasn't eaten anything, hasn't done anything till then. Ramanuja says, I have forgotten your case. He was just seeing what's happening with him. I have forgotten your case, forgot to come here. Have you been standing here since morning? He said, yes, I've been standing here for you, waiting for you, he said. So, and have you eaten anything? He says, no, how can I eat till I do my service to you? He says, because I committed this service to you, that I'll be there to accept your service, and then only I will eat. That was my service. Because he is seeing that as a service, because that's what he wanted. So what we have to understand here is, that Brahmana who was receiving this service from Ramanuja was not thinking that it is a service to him. Rather, he was thinking, this is what will please Ramanuja. So to please Ramanuja, he did that. And that, if you see in the light of this verse, that Arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitriya abhinyena chakshusha. In other words, what pleases that super soul in him, that we have to know and do that to please him. Then you can say that you have understood bhakti. Otherwise, it's not bhakti. See, that aham mam sarvabhuteshu bhudalmanam kritalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitriya bhinnena chakshusha. That chakshusa, that I, we need. We need to have that eye, how to please someone, the super soul in a person. Not give him sense gratification, but to please the super soul in that person. To please someone's false ego is very easy. We please all the time, we are pleasing people through their false ego, isn't it? But to please the super soul in a person requires intelligence and requires a little higher, deeper understanding of spiritual life. Otherwise, it's not possible. Otherwise, it's not possible. So that you will see that quality in very elevated personalities. You will see that quality in them. That it is two different things. Pleasing a person by pleasing his ego, by giving him something to please him, or by offering something, or praising him. In so many ways you can please people, isn't it? That is pleasing the false ego. That's different. But pleasing super soul, Krishna who is present as Atma inside, to please, knowing that Krishna is present there, and to please him in the proper way, that is what that verse is talking, and that is bhakti. Pleasing the ego is not bhakti. Pleasing the Krishna, Atma who is present in a person, pleasing him is bhakti. That is the difference here to understand. Athamam sarvabhudeshu. That is why that verse is important. If you want to understand bhakti, many places you have to go back to Bhagavadam to see the explanations of all these things. Athamam sarvabhudeshu bhudalmanam kritalayam arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitriya abhinyena chakshusha. When you see bhakti in this way, you will start realizing how sophisticated bhakti is, how subtle bhakti is, how complex this thing called bhakti is. We have got so many misunderstanding about bhakti. What happens to all of us is, we get carried away by the glamour of everything, isn't it? The glamour takes control of everything. Glamour in the sense that everybody is doing that, so that must be correct. That's our sheepish mentality. Some shepherd is there and we are all like the sheep following them without thinking about it. What is bhakti? If you ask that question, it's not so easy to explain bhakti. But through these verses in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, you can get an insight into that. And then generally what we do, we will sometimes because we don't care for anything, we just think that what suits me, that's bhakti. That's not bhakti. That Krishna is present in that person, that should please him in that way, and it is done in that way, that's bhakti. That's bhakti. How many times we go completely out of it? We lose the whole understanding and we go do something wrong. And then we upset the person and then he says, I've done all this for him, he has no gratitude, we'll say. So many things happens like that in spiritual life and then it all breaks up at the end. So that's not good. So in order that this science, if it's not understood very well, then we will tend to commit mistakes all the time. Adhamam sarveshu bhudeshu. Krishna is saying, in all living entities, bhudalpanam kridalayam, my presence, recognize that first. And you learn arhaya dana manabhyam, how to please that my presence inside, Andaryami inside. Learn how to please him. Maitreya abhinayana chakshusha, through friendship and without seeing your difference from him. That it is that Krishna who is present within my heart is the same Krishna who is present in the other person's heart also. In that way, if you understand that science properly and if you learn with intelligence how to do it properly, then you have got bhakti. That is bhakti. Normal life, what we do is pleasing each other's false ego. That's what we do, isn't it? Mutually pleasing the false ego. You did this for me, I do that for you. Or you praise somebody, you give money to someone. And different ways we try to do that. But that is not bhakti. So that incident in the Ramanuja's case, that Ramanuja says to him, how will I eat? He said, the Brahmana said, without doing my kangaryam, he says. How will I eat today? So, and then he sat down and afterwards Ramanuja washed his feet and then Ramanuja says to him, this is bhakti. Ramanuja wanted to explain to him that this is bhakti. This is bhakti. What you do is not important. By doing what you will please Krishna inside the heart of the other person, that is important. What you do is not important. But by doing which you please the super soul in the other Andaryami inside, that is important. The Brahmana's approach was, even if I get sinful reaction from this, because asking Ramanujacharya to wash your feet is not an ordinary thing, isn't it? So he said, even if that happens, if that is please, that pleases you, that's what you ask me, you want that. And nobody else is willing to do that for you. But I am willing to do that even if I have to go to hell, he says. The Brahmana says to Ramanuja. He says, even if I have to go to hell, doesn't matter if that pleases you. That's how he took that. So Ramanuja, he says, if Ramanujacharya is pleased with my service, so be it, he says. So Yadrashi, Yadrashi, Shraddha, Siddhar Bhavati Yadrashi. Wherever our Shraddha is there, the perfection will be there. Yadrashi, Yadrashi, Shraddha, Siddhir Bhavati Yadrashi. That is the principle. So, in whichever way our Shraddha works, accordingly, the perfection also in spiritual life. If you want to please someone, actually what pleasing someone means, pleasing Krishna within that person. That is what pleasing someone means. Not pleasing his false ego or pleasing his desires. No. So, that is why in different places you will see that where there is in several temples in India, you will notice that several deities are offered several food, kinds of food stuff, isn't it? For example, if you go to Maharashtra, you will see Ganesh is offered a certain type of modagam. That means that just to please a deity, that's what the acharyas have decided like this, that these things are pleasing to the deities in this way. So here various things, and who has found out all these things, that's very difficult to say, but the principle behind is that how to please every deity in this is how these different kinds of deity worship has come into. that some ways people have found out, great devotees have found out actually, through their relationship with that particular deity. Like devotees of Subramanya, they will worship in one way. Devotees of Ganesh worship is in one way. Devotees of Shiva worship in one way. Devotees of Sri Parvati worships in another way. So how did these different methods of worship has come? From devotees' experiences, great devotees, they found out over years of their service, and they learned how to please Krishna within them all. Whether it is Parvati, whether it is Subramanya or Ganesh or anybody, within all of them, Krishna's presence they have understood, and they have learned the art of pleasing that Krishna inside them. So, and this expertise of pleasing someone in this way, and that kind of worship, Aradhana, is called Bhakti. That is called Bhakti. Bhakti is not something what we have made up of ourselves, something. Ahamam, athamam, sarveshu bhudeshu. If you look into that word, Kapila Vasudev says there, athamam, sarveshu bhudeshu, bhudalmanam krithalayam, arhaye dhanamana abhyam, maitriya bhinnena chakshushaha. So, so that, when will you know that? What places? When we have bhakti inside, we will know that. So, that bhakti that comes like that is what is known as Antaryami worship. Worship of the Antaryami inside. So, Krishna mentions here that in all living entities, inside everybody, that pleasing Krishna within everyone, you will know how to do that. And that Antaryami Aradhana, the worship in the Antaryami, Antaryami is Krishna. Worshipping Antaryami in everyone is first class bhakti. You see, first class bhakti. That is why, if you remember this, if you look into that words of first class, Uttama Bhakta, Madhyama Bhakta, Prakrita Bhakta, three kinds of devotees. Remember, in the Ekadasha Skandam, in the 11th canto, when Nimi and Kavi Maharshi, Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, Navayogis and nine sages and Nimi, that conversation, you can notice there. It says that, let's see. Sarvabhudeshu yapashyed Bhagaval Bhavam Alpana Bhudani Bhagavatyesha Savai Bhagavadottama. You remember that verse? That is a verse for a Bhagavaduttama. First class devotee, he asked. Who asked this question? Nimi asked, who is the first class devotee? In answer to that, Navayogis are saying, Hari Maharshi is saying there actually, Sarvabhudeshu yapashyed Bhagavad Bhavam Almana, that in all living entities, recognizing Krishna's presence first. Then what else? Bhudani Bhagavati Esha Savai Bhagavadottama. Not only recognizing Krishna's presence in everyone, also to recognize that Krishna who is within me is the same Krishna who is within him as well. If you have recognized that, then you are a first class devotee. That is how Bhagavadam says, Sarvabhudeshu yapashyed Bhagavad Bhavam. That Bhagavad Bhavam. Recognizing Krishna in everyone, without which it is not a first class service. Whereas deity worship is considered to be the third, the lowest in the level. See, deity worship is the lowest one. We think deity worship is the highest and everything else is the lowest. We are made exactly opposite. That's what you see most of the time. Many people who haven't got an idea about bhakti, what bhakti means, because they don't know anything about it. They are thinking that deity worship is the first thing. And looking at everyone else in a very, in a ridiculing way, that is not bhakti. That's not bhakti. Arhaye dhanamanabhyam maitriya abhinena chakshusha. You can see the relationship, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam is not different. இன் பகவதம் சர்வபூதேஷிய பசியத் பகவத்பாவமால்பனா பூதானி பகவதி ஏஷ சவை பகவதோத்தமா இஸ் ஐஸ் அ ஃபஸ்ட் கிளாஸ் டிவோட்டி ஈஸ் தட் குவாலிட்டி இன் ஹிம் டு ஒன் சர்வபூதேஷு எப் பசியத் சர்வபூதம் இன் ஆல் லிவிங் என்டிட்டிஸ் வித்தவுட் தட் டிஸ் கிளாசிஃபைங் தம் ஆஸ் ஹையர் அண்ட் லோவர் சீயிங் இன் எவ்ரி ஒன் பகவத்பாவம் தட் கிருஷ்ணா இஸ் பிரசன்ட் இன் தட் பாடி ஹூ எவர் இட் இஸ் டசன்ட் மேட்டர் பகவத்பாவம் ஆத்மனா தென் வாட் எல்ஸ் பூதானி பகவதி ஏஷ சவை பகவதோத்தமா கிருஷ்ணா ஹூ இஸ் பிரசன்ட் இட் வித் இன் மீ இட் இஸ் த சேம் கிருஷ்ணா ஹூ இஸ் பிரசன்ட் இன் தட் பர்சன் ஆல்சோ அண்ட் தட் நாட் டு டிஃபரன்ஷியேட் லைக் தட் இஃப் வி டிவலப் தட் அண்டர்ஸ்டாண்டிங் அந்தர்யாமி வர்ஷிப் வில் பிகம் பெர்ஃபெக்ட் ஆல் உபனிஷட்ஸ் டாக் அபவுட் இஸ் அந்தர்யாமி வர்ஷிப் தே டோன்ட் டாக் அபவுட் டெய்டி வர்ஷிப் ஈவன் டெய்டி வர்ஷிப் கேம் இன் தி எண்ட் ஆஃப் த்ரேதாயுகம் மச் லேட்டர் அந்தர்யாமி வர்ஷிப் கோஸ் ஆன் ஃப்ரம் டைம் ஆஃப் த சேஜஸ் தட்ஸ் தி டிஃபரன்ஸ் ஸோ வி வாட் ஹேஸ் ஹேப்பன்ட் இஸ் ஃபார் அஸ் நவ் ஆஸ் வி பிகம் மோர் அண்ட் மோர் இண்டிவிஜுவலிஸ்டிக் அண்ட் கம்பார்ட்மெண்டலைஸ்ட் அவர் லைஃப் லிமிட்டட் டு மீ மை ஒய்ஃப் அண்ட் மை சில்ட்ரன் நோபடி எல்ஸ் நத்திங் எல்ஸ் மேட்டர்ஸ் இன் திஸ் வேர்ல்ட் அண்ட் தட் ஐ மூட் டிவலப்ட் இன் அஸ் as much as become like that we start thinking that we can't relate with each other so we can at least with deity won't complain anything you can do whatever you want you will stand there and look at us won't say anything it became easier that way but proper understanding is that because anywhere you look in the Bhagavad Gita also you will see that you remember that what is Krishna's greatest opulence isn't it aham alma gudagesha சர்வபூதாசய ஸ்திதா அஹம் ஆத்யஞ்ச மத்யஞ்ச பூதானாம் அந்தமேவஜ கிருஷ்ணா இஸ் சேயிங் பிகினிங் மிடில் அண்ட் எண்ட் ஆஃப் இட் இட்ஸ் ஆல் மீஸ் பிரசன்ட் இன் அனதர் அஹமாம் சர்வபூதேஷு பூதாத்மானம் கிருதாத்மனா தி சேம் திங் அஹம் ஆத்ம குடாகிஷ தட் இஸ் கிருஷ்ணா சேஸ் தட் இஸ் மை கிரேட்டஸ்ட் விபூதி கிரேட்டஸ்ட் ஆப்புலன்ஸ் நத்திங் எல்ஸ் அண்ட் தட் இஸ் த மோஸ்ட் இம்பார்ட்டன்ட் வேர்ட்ஸ் இன் தட் சாப்டர் எக்ஸாக்ட்லி லைக் நாசதோ வித்யதேவாவோ இட்ஸ் அனதர் இம்பார்ட்டன்ட் வேர்ட்ஸ் இன் தட் Rajavidya Rajagohyam in the 10th chapter sorry Vibhuti Yogam that is the most important verse so that verse is saying exactly the same thing and worshipping that way Krishna as Antaryami inside is a higher worship than the worship of the deity there's no question about that but to come to that state the deity worship is just a beginning of that to because we can't see that Antaryami in the beginning therefore Acharyas have given this system of deity worship through which we are supposed to move on to that. But the principle is same that first class devotee, what Bhagavadam says, Bhagavad Gita says, is exactly the same. Sarvabhudeshu yap pashyed Bhagavad bhavam almana Bhudani Bhagavat yesha savai Bhagavadoktama Krishna says that. Kavi Maharshi, Hari Maharshi says that. Then he says in the next verse, ஈஸ்வர சர்வபூதேஷு ததனியேஷு பாலிஷல் பிரேமம் மைத்ரி கிருபா உபேட்சா எக்கரோதிச மத்தியமா த நெக்ஸ்ட் வேர்ட்ஸ் ஸோ தென் ஹீ சேஸ் த நெக்ஸ்ட் லோவர் லெவல் இட் இஸ் வாட் இஸ் தட் மத்தியமாதிகாரி திஸ் ஃபர்ஸ்ட் ஒன் இஸ் உத்தமாதிகாரி பரமபாகவத பியூர் டிவோட்டி தட் ஸ்டேட் ஸோ ஃப்ரம் பியூர் டிவோட்டி வென் யூ கம் டு மத்தியமாதிகாரி இட் பிகம்ஸ் ஈஸ்வர ததனியேஷு பலிஷேஷு துஷல் சுச்ச That is where discrimination starts. Discrimination means you start separating people. Somebody is friendly, somebody is friend, somebody is enemy. Premam, Maitri, Kripa. Somebody is to someone ignorant and someone else very envious. So you have to deal with them separately in that way. Premam, Maitri, Kripa, Upeksha. Four kind of things. Prema means friendship to devotees. Love for Krishna, friendship to devotees. Premam is love for Krishna. Maitri, friendship to devotees. Kripa, those who are ignorant. And Upeksha, those who are envious. So, their classification has come. Whereas in the higher level, higher than that, what Krishna spoke about, he says there, is the what is known as bhakti. So, strictly speaking, Madhyamadhikari is bhakti and then the lower one Kanishthadhikari, his bhakti is not discussed in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Bhagavadam just touch and go. Bhagavad Gita doesn't even discuss it. You see, the Madhyamadhikari is bhakti or Kanishtadhikari is bhakti. That's not even discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita has got only one thing to say, pure bhakti. And that means this, Athamam Sarveshu Bhudeshu Bhudalpanam Kritalayam. Sarveshu Bhudeshu Bhudalpanam Kritalayam Arhaya Dhanamanabhyam Maitreya Abhinena Chakshusha. That is in the Bhagavadam. And here Krishna is saying, Adveshta Sarvabhudanam Maitra Karuna Evaja Nirmamo Nirahangana Samadukham Sukhakshami Sandushta Satatam Yogi Yada Alma Dridanishchayaha My Arpida Manobodhir Yomal Bhakta Same Priyaha. Krishna is saying, such a person is very, very dear to me. Krishna is saying, such a person is very, no dvesham towards anyone, no ragam attachment. If there is no ragam, there won't be any dvesham. If there is ragam, there will be dvesham. So Krishna says, in fact, at the end of this chapter, you will see, after saying all the symptoms of the devotee, Krishna says at the very end, Yedu dharmyamrtamidam. If you look in the last verse, you will see, Yedu dharmyamrtamidam. Dharmyamrtam. Krishna calls it as dharmyamrtam. Dharmyamrtam means, if you look into the verse 20, I think, Yedu dharmyamrtamidam, there is a verse there. Yedu dharmyamrtamidam, yedoktam paryubhasade, Shraddhadhanam alparama bhaktaste divame priyaham. Krishna says there that he calls this bhakti, what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, as dharmyamrtam. Dharmyamrtam, that is the word Krishna has used there, because only one who knows dharmam properly, he can alone can remove ragam and dvesham from inside. Ragam and dvesham means attachment and aversion. Isn't it? In order to remove that, he has to know dharmam first. So that is what Krishna is going to discuss here. If I do something for somebody, if it is beneficial to him, not materially, what is the right thing, if you do that, that is called a dharmam. Hitam. That is what is called a dharmam. For example, by... If you do something for somebody, if it is helping him spiritual life, that is dharmam. That is dharmam. But sometimes you can see parents' case, for example, when they have to buy things for children. Children will demand so many things, isn't it? As soon as you take them to any shopping center, they'll tell you what they want. And you keep your credit card ready to buy everything what they need. If you have to do that, that is not dharmam. That is not dharmam. But to know what will help a child to develop spiritually and do anything for them for that purpose, that is dharmam. That's why Krishna uses that word, dharmyamrtam. So unless we know what is dharmam, we cannot act properly without ragadvesham. It is not possible. So Krishna says here, sometimes I may think that something is dharmam and I'll do it, but it will may become adharmam at the end. It can go the other way. So, suppose somebody comes and he says to him, I felt that when I see you, I must offer you some coffee. Should give you some coffee if I felt like that. And that is my hand. And I made the coffee for you and I gave it you coffee. And he says to me that, I got diabetes. I can't take any sugar. Oh, doesn't matter. You enjoy the coffee now. Have a full load of 3 teaspoons of sugar and enjoy as well. That is not dharmam. Not knowing the hitam, but just to please him. And that person in his weakness of mind, he took it and then he suffers later with the problem. So, they say to him, so similarly here, I like you, that's why I'm giving you the sugar, he says. But that's not dharmam. I like him, but I'm giving him sugar and giving him trouble as well. But that's not dharmam. Dharmam is actually love. Dharmam is actually love. So, sneham or love is not an emotion. It's not an emotion. And we will learn that while living in this world. Dharmam, tyagam, shanti, all these things, Krishna says that it has to be practiced and developed. In the sense that knowing these things properly is an important thing. That's why from now on you will see from this Advaita Sarvabhudanam verses onwards, so many things Krishna has spoken. Sandushta sadadam yogi yadalma dridanishchayaha mai arpidamano buddhir yomal bhakta same priyaham yasmano dujade logo logano dujade chayaham harshamarshamayo dugir muktoya sajame priyaham anabesha sujirdaksha udasino gadavyadaha sarvarambha parityagi yomal bhakta same priyaham ಯೋನ ಹೃಷ್ಯದಿ ನ ದ್ವೇಷ್ಟಿ ನ ಶೋಚದಿ ನ ಕಾಂಕ್ಷದಿ ಶುಭಾಶುಭ ಪರಿತ್ಯಾಗಿ ಭಕ್ತಿಮಾನ್ಯ ಸಮೇ ಪ್ರಿಯಾಃ ಸಮೌ ಶತ್ರೌ ಚ ಮಿತ್ರೇ ಚ ತಥಾ ಮಾನಾಪಮಾನಯೋ ಶೀತೋಷ್ಣಂ ಸುಖ ದುಃಖೇಶು ಸಮಸಂಗ ವಿವರ್ಜಿತಾಃ ತುಲ್ಯ ನಿಂದ ಸ್ತುತಿರ್ಮೌನಿ ಸಂತುಷ್ಟೋ ಯೇನ ಕೇನಚಿ ಅನಿಗೇದ ಸ್ಥಿರಮತಿರ್ ಭಕ್ತಿಮಾನ್ ಮೇ ಪ್ರಿಯೋ ನರಾಃ ಯದು ಧರ್ಮ್ಯಾಮೃತಮಿದಂ ಯಥೋಕ್ತಂ ಪರಿಭಾಸದೆ ಶ್ರದ್ಧಾನಮಲ್ಪರಮ ಭಕ್ತಾಸ್ತೇ ದಿವ ಮೇ ಪ್ರಿಯಾಃ So we keep looking at these verses, you can see there is no reference to any sadhana. Nothing is discussed here in these verses, Bhakti Yoga chapter. No discussion about sadhana, no discussion about any kind of shastra jnanam, completely yoga system, nothing is talked about. All that is centered around one's consciousness, how he acts in this world. And Krishna says, bhakti process in that way, it is simple. If these qualities, what Krishna is talking about in this chapter, if it becomes our character, our swabhavam, then we are devotee. Otherwise not. That is the simple conclusion from that. So, here, this goes on. You can see here that the... Advaita Sarvabhudanam verses onwards, you will see many devotees have to go through so many experiences like this, So we will stop there today. It's 5:10. Continue next Saturday and tomorrow at Bhagavatam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.